Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, we're going to be talking sequester, sequester, sequester. Yes, another manufactured crisis set to cause real, actual damage to, well, to you and me. And this is what infuriates me every time we turn around. You see these Republicans setting up another situation, and it's all for the same purpose. To get us to throw our hands up and say, ah, they're all crooks, they're all no good, the system's broken, the system's corrupt. So in can come the profiteers, and they'll do it, and things will be so nice and quiet, and things will, well, they'll get done for a price. Also going to talk about disaster capitalism growing in the ranks of education as the York City School District looks to be moving to embrace the billionaire bonanza. That's right, charter schools, the whole push towards privatization. We're going to talk about why this is bad, why it's bad, 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 and who started it. And I think we know the moneyed interests. Also, more election fraud going on right under our noses as Republicans across the country embrace the Dominic Pileggi plan. If you remember when I said, when Michigan Governor Rick Snyder said, I think it was back the end of January, said, now is not the time, appropriate time to look at the Republican scheme, and I said, watch out, it's coming. Well, it's a coming, and it's a coming. And it's going to be coming here, mark my words. Also, more attacks on workers as the big money-funded GOP cons push their no rights at work agenda, prevailing wage front and center. Because, you know, if we're going to spend $1.8 billion over the next 5 years to fix a crumbling infrastructure that our governor, that his own commission says needs $6.5 billion. We're going to have to get it from somewhere. And guess where? You got it. It's going to be the workers. And also the trial to determine what caused the 2010 Deepwater Horizon explosion and oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico that cost 11 workers their lives. Well, that began today. We're going to talk with someone who was right there throughout the whole thing, lived through the aftermath, and how things are going right now. Also, your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Interesting weekend. Got some cleaning done in the garage. Enjoyed that about time. And that's what I like about spring. It's kind of a rebirth, a renewing, commitments, all of that stuff. Got some cleaning things done around the house. My daughter had her basketball banquet. So it was a good weekend for me. A lot of talk about pensions, though. I ran into a number of people who, you know, this is on the minds of the people who are going to be screwed by this. And what gets me is it runs across party lines. It runs across working class divide lines. You know, what goes on, and we've talked about this a number of times, what goes on is you get people who try to divide groups. Your white collar, your blue collar, your management, you're not, your union, your non-union, white women, men, white, black, you know, all of that, all of those divisions. And they foster those to keep us pitted against one another so that we don't all turn around collectively and go, wait a minute, we're all getting screwed. It's one thing to point our fingers and go, ah, that guy. But when you realize when that epiphany comes, when that moment of clarity comes, and you can see it in people's eyes when they go, wait a minute, I'm in the shark tank with them. We're all going down together. That's when you have an opportunity to really grow something so that we stop this. And this pension issue is one of those, because everybody's getting screwed by this. The union workers, absolutely. The non-union workers, you bet. Taxpayers, oh boy, are you getting screwed by this plan. And all down the list, you're talking about ideology over reality. And our governor has come up with this great plan. We're going to move to a 401k plan, like, you know, those wonderful things in the private sector. And talk to anybody who has a 401k. Are they happy with it? I've yet to find anybody who's truly thrilled, especially since 2008. Well, 2001 and 2004, 2005, 2006, and especially 2008, where my 401k went to a 200.5, like many people's. But I saw this story over at Penn Live that caught my attention. And it's one of these things that, again, it's that moment of clarity. And the headline was State Employees Prefer Pensions Over Possible Raise with a 401k. And what they're talking about is they're talking about the state, the non-union employees. And I just want to read the beginning of Jan Murphy's article, because I think it's, if you needed a poster on why people need to join and form, collectively join unions, her beginning of this article is that. She says more than 13,000 state employees in non-union positions have been pleading for justice when it comes to their paychecks. For 4 years, she writes, they saw union employees get raises while they received only one that was just enough to cover their increased health care copay. Meanwhile, their union brethren have enjoyed raises of nearly 13% during that span. She goes on to say that thanks to the non-union management type folks, the Commonwealth saved $200 million. That if you look at what's gone on over the last 2 years, what they have been happy to do with that $200 million is give it away through the Delaware loophole, give it away to the drillers, basically give it away to business interests. So thank you, management employees for the state. I am sure, in fact, I'm quite certain that the good folks in big business are happy at your sacrifice, happy that you've shouldered that burden for them. So the Patriot had asked the governor, you know, do you know this? And he goes, well, yeah, we know, but they've been doing good work for us, and, you know, the money's not there, that whole nonsense. So he comes up with this idea. He says, well, you know what we could do? If they were willing to switch to a defined benefit plan, you know, like a 401k, or a defined contribution plan, you know, like a 401k, we could probably have enough money to give them a raise. And the state employees are going, wait a second. That's a screw job of epic proportion. One woman called it blackmail. Only one woman for the story was willing to give her name. And I give her credit for being willing to stand up in the front of the line. The other employees that they talk to, fear of retaliation and retribution. And again, if you needed a reason to join and form a union, right there. And the article points out that she talked to some people, and I've gone through this. And today is the day that, back in 2011, that Wisconsin began. 100,000 people showed up to the Capitol and told their governor, don't screw with public workers and their unions. Don't steal that right away. Which is what our governor and what the Republicans here want to do, exactly what they did in Wisconsin, which has worked out horribly. But in the article, the woman points out that someone that they talked to said that they see contractors making three times what they're making a year and saying, you know, I just can't stomach another one of these cuts. I can't stomach all of this waste and all of this disparity. Can't stomach it. And it took me back, when I read that, it took me back to being in Wisconsin, because, you know, back when Wisconsin, we were there. We were broadcasting from inside the state capitol when the Republicans decided, you know what, we're gonna screw these people in the dark of night. I was sleeping on the marble floor, freezing my behind off when the news came down. And there were thousands of people angry. And I look at this and I go, you know, we need to be organizing. We need to be coming out in droves and saying, no, we're not doing this. This is the wrong direction. These are wrong priorities. These are wrong-headed priorities. And in my view, immoral, really. And if you have to take the pro-business approach, destructive for our state's economy. You know, I think back, and the story just pops, it just sticks with me. And I told it when I was in Wisconsin. I had gone, it's a long drive to Madison. I think it was 14 hours it took us to get there. And when I got there, I had to get my oil changed. And I was in line, you know, to pay the bill, and their guy in front of me was a retiring state worker. And the conversation between him and the guy behind the counter were about what was going on. And the guy's like, well, you know, I'm retired. I'm going to take my pension. And I got a job doing the exact same job that I was doing for the state at more than double the wage. And he turned and he walked by. And, you know, as I went up, the guy behind the counter, who I assume was the guy who owned the business, was fuming. He looked at me, he goes, can you believe he's going to take his pension and do the same job? And I said, well, he did earn the pension. He wasn't upset that the job that this guy had done for, you know, 25, 30 years, however long it was, is now being done by a company that's going to charge two and a half times, three times as much. And again, I guess our focus is in different places. I look at this whole push towards destroying the state employee pension fund, the teachers' pension funds. It's another stake in the privatization trend. You know, this is why they're pushing privatization. This is why the corporatists in the GOP want to do exactly what they got away with in the private sector to the folks who are in the public sector. Theft, pure and simple. And, you know, I had the opportunity to talk to a couple of teachers over the weekend that, you know, as we talked about this pension issue, was very, you know, it's an attack on them. You know, they got into teaching, knew they were going to make less money because, you know what, they're going to have a little bit of security when they retire. And one of them told me that if they change this through, they go to the 401k, they do what this governor is saying, he's going to leave. And I look at my kids, where my kids go to school, there are, I think, five teachers who are taking their money and running. Because there is a push to destroy public education, or as the right-wingers want you to hear it, it's government as schools. It's not public school, it's government school. Because, again, it's this whole push towards privatization. And, of course, lower wages. Because everyone knows you go to these charter schools, they make less than the public school teachers. And I think there needs to be people in the streets. There need to be people standing up and saying no. There need to be teachers standing, no, we're professional. We're going to stand up for our profession. There need to be students who are going to stand up and say, you know what, that's going to be my job in 5, 10, 15 years. We need parents to stand up and say, we need professional educators educating our children, not grilling and drilling them, but actually training critical thinkers, actually training students. Wow, what a novel concept. And, of course, taxpayers. Because if you end up in a school district with a bunch of fly-by-night failing charters, what do you think's going to happen to your property value? I mean, if we need to narrow this down into narrow self-interest, what's in it for me? Every homeowner, your property value, like it or not, is dependent on where your school ranks. If you're in an area where the schools are not that great, guess what? Your property values are going to be in the tank. So I'm telling you, as this continues, and we're going to be working to try and organize folks to get out in the streets, because I think education, this is the hill that the working class of this country has to die upon. Because we fought too hard, too long, too much blood, too much sweat, too many tears to get compulsory education for every child, to let it go without a fight. Going to take a quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. We want the world and we want it now. We're going to take it anyhow. We want the outrage.
Not right wing. Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
The main focus of the mainstream media during the Academy Awards last night was on the red carpet and inside the Dolby Theater. But outside, more than 400 workers and their supporters were gathered. The workers were visual effects artists from Rhythm and Hughes Effects House. Rhythm and Hughes created the visual effects for multi-category nominee Life of Pi. Rhythm and Hughes recently filed for bankruptcy and laid off 250 workers. Those workers have subsequently filed a class action lawsuit alleging labor violations. The workers allege that the company didn't provide proper notice for the layoffs in violation of both federal labor laws and California's Worker Adjustment and Retraining Act. Under that act, employers must provide workers with a 60-day notice of mass layoffs. The suit is seeking to provide the workers with a crucial vacation pay, unpaid wages, and unpaid commissions. And 400 workers continue to be employed at the company, which 2 weeks ago was granted a court-approved $17 million loan from Fox and Universal Studios. That money is intended to help the visual effects shop complete work on films currently in progress. Nearly 6 months after Illinois watched tens of thousands of red-shirted teachers walk off the job in Chicago, the state could soon be seeing a similar sea of green. Contract talks between state workers and Illinois Governor Pat Quinn have stalled, and the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees said calling a strike of its members who can legally strike is a real possibility. AFSCME says the Democratic governor is seeking to change health care coverage for workers that could result in employees paying nearly $10,000 more over 3 years. The governor is also considering a wage freeze for state workers. Labor solidarity is strong in Illinois, so while AFSCME doesn't represent all of the Illinois state workers, the union has reason to believe other union members would refuse to cross their picket lines, a right afforded to unionized workers by law. In May, the Chicago Teachers Union could see a referendum on the effectiveness of last September's strike. According to the Chicago Tribune, candidates are lining up to challenge the incumbency of CTU President Karen Lewis's administration. That election will come in May. School counselor Tanya Saunders-Wolf will be running for the seat currently occupied by Lewis under the argument that the current president didn't properly use the leverage granted to her by the first teacher strike in 25 years. Saunders-Wolf told the Tribune that schools are still closing, teachers and staff are still being fired, and other parts of the old contract were lost. Saunders-Wolf told the Tribune that the strike should have been used to ensure a moratorium on school closings.
To win the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
That's why I started giving these speeches. My job is not only commander-in-chief, but educator-in-chief. And I needed to say to the people, you bet it's tough.
There's a family who's done as much to public education to destroy it as possible. You look at his No Child's Dime Left Behind, and you look at his brother Neil, who started Ignite, the testing company that's made millions of dollars in proprietary. I mean, you know, 2 plus 2 is now proprietary information. Can't write that on a piece of paper anymore, I guess. And his brother Jeb, well, that's a whole other story, taking the privatization and profitization of education well up to the next level. And it's just, you know, again, it's the money. Anytime, the old man always told me, anytime a rich guy's going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you you need or don't need something, you better spend two to go the other way. And this is another example of that. There is so much money in the pushing of privatization of education. It's just mind-blowing. And, you know, recently we talked to a woman who, in Philadelphia, who evidently they were going to close her school, the Samuel Gompers School, and move her kids from that neighborhood over into the one of the most dangerous schools in the city. Fortunately, that has been stopped, but I see that there's more closures coming on, even as there's been a city council moratorium on closures for the next year. So why is the school reform committee going forward? That's the question I've got for Sam Reed. He's a Philadelphia school teacher at the Bieber Middle School in Philadelphia. His school just put on the list to be closed. Kind of got a question. Sam, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, how you doing, Rick?
I am good. Explain this to me. I understand the city council passed a one-year moratorium. Why is the SRC putting your school on the list to be closed?
Okay, so my school was originally going to be converted from a middle school, 6-8, to a K-8 school. And the elementary schools, maybe the one that you might have been referring to earlier, was going to be closed down. So the parents in the community, along with myself, by the way, organized the pushback of closing these elementary schools. So the district's knee-jerk reaction was to not close the elementary schools, not closing Gompers Elementary or Overbrook Elementary, but instead closing Bieber Middle School and then having Bieber Middle School students that are 7th and 8th graders moving to a high school.
Oh, that's a brilliant idea.
Yeah,
it's just what I want. I want 17-year-old kids walking around my 12-year-old daughter.
Exactly.
And what genius thought this one up?
Again, it was a decision that was
informed
to the parents and the community at the last minute. We were planning, in fact, to go for hear the results of what was going to be the next steps. And the next thing you know, we got a notice that Bieber was going to be closed. But our closure is going to be tabled under separately from the decision to close the vast majority of the other schools. So their decision, when they decided not to close some of this, because they originally proposed to close 37 schools.
Something like that. I thought it was more than that. I thought it was in the 40s.
Well, it was close. And they took some of those schools were taken off the list, but then two other schools were added to the list. And so it was Bieber and Staten were the schools that were added to the list.
So what's the driver in closing all of these schools? Is it that student enrollment is falling that much, or is it this push towards profitization by bringing in all these charter schools?
Well, basically, when you look at what I've asked this question repeatedly, like what design principles are you basing these decisions on, and there's no clear...
Dartboard.
There's no clear reason, because if you're doing any design principles start with starting off with empathy, and if you're looking at the needs of the community, closing schools without having community really weigh in, it doesn't make any sense. So, but in the case there has been a drop of enrollment in many of our schools. For example, at the Bieber Middle School where I teach, we've lost a lot of student population, and primarily is driven by the fact that school choices allowed parents to go to charter schools, for example, and so we're losing students, and that's creating this tension, you know, charter versus public tension, or in some people call it like you mentioned earlier, it's kind of like this disaster capitalism thing going on.
Yeah, but, you know, I look at this, and at the end of the day, if there are schools that are struggling, we invest in them and we bring them up to par. This idea that somehow you're going to interject this magic of competition, I'm sorry, I'm just not seeing the model that they're throwing out, because what I see is I see you dividing the amount of money that goes into it, and the public schools are the ones who are on the losing end of that division. That, to me, is a serious problem. But I do know, look, this is all moving towards a totally privatized education system where if you can't get in, if you don't have the money, you're just out of luck.
Yeah, and it's interesting how they conveniently use business principles and not use business principles when it's to their benefit, the reformers.
Yeah.
Because if you listen to what the customers said, the customers are clearly saying, we want public schools, but yet you're not listening to the customers. You're closing the public schools. So it seems like they conveniently use business principles when they want to use business principles, but then they don't use business principles when they want to come to making, like, sound judgment.
Yeah, I love the language they use, school choice. And it clearly the people that I've talked to have chosen to keep the schools in their neighborhood open and well-staffed with professional teachers. What they've had rammed down their throats are these charter schools with, you know, who knows what. And how long they're going to be there. And I look down in your area, one of the cyber charters, the Frontier Virtual Cyber Charter, which, you know, in my view was nothing but a sham. And I'm hoping somebody goes to jail over the wasted resource. But at the end of the day, those are still 50 some kids who lost years of education. And I
know. Then they come back to the public. Many of them come back to the public schools. So we have many kids that are coming back. They've tried the cyber, you know, they bought the cyber mantra, but then they come back to our public schools, and like you say, they're more behind than the kids that were stayed in the public school.
Yep. So what are the folks in the community doing to try and save your school? What's the push? I understand, I've talked to a number of people down in your area that have said, you know, as I've been saying, who agree with me, this is the hill that we in the working class have to die on. This is that opportunity at a better life that, in my view, is being taken away from us.
Yeah, so fortunately we have a good home and school leader at our school, Miss Winder, and along with the teachers, the parents, and the community, we've come together to galvanize and push back against this plan. So we in fact, when we got the news, we immediately immediately met with our staff and like, okay, what do we want to do, guys? Hey, we want to fight for our school. Then we said, well, we can't fight alone. So we had to see if, what we were going to do with parents. And the next day we had a PTA meeting. A bunch of parents came in. Then this weekend we met further. Now with at this meeting, in the week this weekend, we had parents, we had community members, we had alumni. So we have a really broad coalition of folks that are galvanizing and mobilizing to push back against this this plan to close our middle school.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Sam Reed. He's a Philadelphia school teacher, a teacher at the Bieber Middle School there in Philadelphia. They got a Facebook page if you want to check it out, facebook.com/save.bieber. We got a link at therickSmithShow.com. Just click on Sam Reed's name. It'll take you right there. You know, when I look at this, when you're talking to these parents, when you're doing this mobilizing, this engagement, do people realize or are they telling you that they see the assaults on teachers, that they're seeing the assaults on education, that they're seeing the attacks on you, your pensions, that kind of stuff? Are you seeing that kind of that kind of enlightenment?
Yeah, it partly that we're seeing that, but even what we're also seeing is that they're starting to pit schools against schools in some degree as well, because prior to our school getting on the chopping block, when the elementary schools were on the chopping block, there were some, narrative that, you know, well, don't close our school, close the middle school. But then some parents stood up and said, no, why should you close the middle school? It's a great school. They provide my child with a quality education, and it's because of the charter schools that we're at this position. And I'm a parent. I support public schools. I want to send my kids to public schools. And so some parents are you know, aware, and some other parents are maybe less aware. So
what worries me, Sam, is I look at what's in the media. I look at how, you know, well, you know, we had to cut education and the funding's not there and taxes are going to go up because, you know, the state didn't contribute. You know, they cut $2 billion over the last 2 years. And well, you know, we got to cut programs. And one person told me that, you know, study hall enrollment is up because all out of classes have been cut. And I don't know that that's a great thing, but that's what's happened. And, you know, the easy answer the media has taken, the answer that the privatizers want is it's the teachers' fault. It's because those teachers won't work for less. It's because those teachers won't take less pensions. And I look at the Chester Upland School District, where for a couple of months last year they worked for free because all of the money went over to the charter school. And
exactly.
of course, the consultant that they have, Vaughn Gagorian, over $16 million he took out of public education while those teachers weren't getting paid a dime.
That is, like you say, that is just disgusting. And now, in fact, I mean, we're going to be gearing up for our contract. Our contract is going to come to an end this coming year. The PFT, our local teachers union, and we're going to have similar issues. You know, they're talking about us having to take a 17% cut in pay.
Wow.
So that they can, you know, fill the budget hole.
And so we can build more prisons.
Making these concessions when at the same time you're lavishing monies in other forms, in other ways.
Well, I mean, we're giving huge handouts to big corporations and we're building prisons. Hey, that's what happens. That's the benefit of disaster capitalism. The benefit is you have kids that you've failed, you've destroyed the education system, so we can warehouse them in prisons for $40,000, $50,000 a year. It's a good business solution, Sam.
Yeah, interestingly, you mentioned the prison, because today we had a special assembly. Representative Ron Waters brought in a program. It's called Education Not Incarceration, and was basically warning the kids and giving kids advice in terms of trying to staying out of trouble, because basically the fact that they're investing more money, they're making a gamble and investing more money in prisons than they are in schools, because they're thinking, okay, this, you guys are going to fill up the prisons. And that's a real sad commentary when you have to think about it, and for that kind of narrative for kids to even have to be thinking in that kind of way, it's really, I'm kind of glad I'm not a kid right now, you know?
I'll tell you, I've said that a number of times. They've got everything stacked against them, because we've got a governor and an administration here who's hell-bent on destroying public education. And not just this administration. This is a nationwide plan. This is a nationwide agenda by the wealthy to say, you know what, those people at the bottom, they're getting a little too uppity. They're getting educated. We can't have that because you can't control them if they've got a thought in their head. And I guess maybe I take this to the next level because that's where I see it going. If we don't have critical thinkers, if we don't have kids who can see a problem and fix it, we got real problems in the solution beyond the destruction of a couple of buildings.
Yeah, and what we use is we use these narrow standardized test scores as a means to really measure what kids can do or what they can't do, which really don't mean a hill of beans, really, when you think about it. But yet they're using these metrics to measure my quality, to measure a kid's quality is really really short-sighted.
I absolutely agree. Last question I've got for you. You know, here in this area, people say, well, it's just a Philadelphia thing, even though I hear reports that the City School District in our area, in this area, is going to be going all charter from the rumors that I'm hearing. What do you say to someone who says, it's just a Philadelphia, that's an inner city thing, never could happen here?
I mean, like you say, you just take a look at the landscape around the country. Like New Orleans was like, you talk about, that's the model of disaster capitalism and education.
Yep.
They took, when they had a disaster, that was like a real time. They didn't even have to manufacture one. Nature helped them. And boom, next thing you know, the school district basically gets out of the business of being a school district.
Yep.
And turns it over to other interests. So I'm like, if you're not in the interest of provide, again, like you say, they select and choose when they want to be in the business of education. If you're in the business of education, that's your business. Why are you contracting it out to other folks?
Because that's the way. That's the business way, Sam. When we went down after Hurricane Katrina to visit and see the folks on the ground, one guy told me there was a contractor who was contracted to pick up all the trash. And the original contractor who got the no-bid contract, it was $47 a ton to move the trash. And by the time they contracted it down until the guy who actually picked up the trash, it was $3 a ton. So you want to talk about waste, fraud, and abuse right there, how much money we wasted on this no-bid process of people who had the connections to get the contract, and we're going to do the exact same thing to education. I fear, as you've said, I fear what's going to happen for our kids. Again, the Facebook page is facebook.com/save.bieber. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Sam Reed's name. It'll take you right there. Sam, I appreciate your time, and I'd love to bring you back to talk as this goes down the road.
I appreciate it, Rick.
Thanks so much.
Oh, one last thing, Rick. We're having, just FYI for the community at large, we're having a Save the Bieber School rally in front of our school on Friday, and people can go to the Facebook page to find out about that as well.
Outstanding. Thanks so much, Sam. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Quick break. Right back. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
This is why we fight, why we violate. This is why we fight.
Finally, radio for the rest of us. Rick Smith.
Buy the stuff you love with retailers' credit cards. Ditch their high interest rates with the help of PSECU. Move those balances to the PSECU Visa with no transfer fee and a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through December 31st, 2014. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit PSECU.com/visa for complete program details. Whatever new stuff you bought last year with retailers' high-interest credit cards, let PSECU help you get a fresh new start. Move those balances to the PSECU Visa with no transfer fee and a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through December 31st, 2014. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit PSECU.com/visa for complete program details. This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
When President Obama called for raising America's wage floor to $9 an hour, GOP House Leader John Boehner attacked it like a gator on a poodle. Incredibly, he claimed that raising the wages of our country's most poorly paid workers would hurt, guess who? America's most poorly paid workers. This disingenuous continuous pitting of poor people against themselves is derived from a corporate-manufactured myth that hiking the minimum forces small business owners to fire employees or even go bankrupt. When you raise the price of employment, he grumped, guess what happens? You get less of it. Well, guess again, John. That job killer fable has been debunked again and again by real-world experience. The pay floor has constantly been elevated by Congress, states, and cities, causing little to zero negative impacts on job numbers, but very positive results for employee morale, productivity, and turnover. It also generates a spending boost for local economies, especially for, guess who, small businesses. Obviously, the major impact of the raise is to lift the incomes of about 18 million hardworking people in low-wage jobs, allowing them to make a down payment on a used car or enroll in a couple of community college classes. Plus, it gives at least a token nod to the essential need of bridging America's dangerously widened chasm of economic inequality. This is Jim Hightower saying, the real shame in the Republican leader's attack is not his flagrant dishonesty, but the raw disdain it flings at low-wage workers, 60% of whom are women. The Boehners, Romneys, Koch brothers, and Wall Street billionaires see such people only in terms of their price tags, not in their value. That dehumanized contempt for the working class not only stains those who look down on the non-rich, but it's also holding back public policies to help America reach its full economic potential, and it is social dynamite.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
They believe in teachers' unions. We believe in teachers.
What they do, they smile in your face. All the time they want to take your place, the backstabbers.
Our quote of the day comes from Uncle Milton Friedman, who wrote in his 1982 book, Capitalism and Freedom. He says, when a crisis occurs, the actions that are taken depend on the ideas that are lying around. So, you know, none of this stuff just happens. There's a whole push to lay the groundwork so that when you can either have a natural disaster like happened in New Orleans, or if you can create a crisis like we're doing in cities across this country with governors like ours across the country who are defunding and walking away from public education, it's those ideas that have been lying around that you go back to. And I think about something else Uncle Milty had to say back in the 90s. He said that vouchers are not an end in themselves. They are a means to make a transition from a government to a free market system. This whole idea, this whole push to privatize public schools, Uncle Milty, he invented this concept of the voucher because it was all, he knew you couldn't privatize. You couldn't show up one day and go, you know what? We're going to privatize your local public school. Nobody would buy it. But you think about a couple of generations of competition, market-based forces. Don't you want your public school to compete? And we started to buy into it. And it sounds pretty good. Oh, I can get a golden ticket. I can get the golden ticket, and I can send my kid to the lab school or to the, you know, Gilmore Academy where I used to live in Cleveland, or the Germantown Academy in Philadelphia. These places that charge $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year for kindergarten. I can get the golden ticket. I can send my kid there. That's what they want you to believe. It's not reality, though. And I look at this, and all of these crises, whether it's natural or created, $2 billion have been gutted from education the last 2 years. You wonder why the schools are struggling? $2 billion has been cut from education. So who do they turn to? The teachers. And you heard him say it. They're going to want a 17% pay cut. Ask yourself, can you, that's almost one day of the week gone. For what? Well, to get people out of it. And I truly believe all of this division, all of this push to privatize, all of this push to destroy pensions, all of this stuff, it's designed specifically to get good people out of it so that, well, what happens? Well, education takes a dive. And then we have a two-class society like John Edwards talked about, the two Americas. And it's going to be based on who has education, who has health care. Not who has the best ideas and who's the best worker. That's that competition stuff. That isn't what the wealthy want. That isn't what big business wants. They want monopoly. They want control. They want power. And it's something we better fight for. And we better fight hard for. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by AFSCME Council 13.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our site at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Earth, sky.
Monday, February 25th. Today's full moon is the third full moon after the December 21st solstice.
In North America, we call it the sap moon, Lenten moon, crow moon, or worm moon. There are many more names for full moons. Come to earthsky.org and search for full moon names to learn some of them.
Every full moon stands opposite, or nearly opposite, the sun and earth's sky. It presents its fully lighted hemisphere, its entire day side, in our direction. That's why the moon looks full. So watch for tonight's moon to rise in the east around the time of sunset, climb highest up for the night around midnight, and set in the west Tuesday morning around sunrise.
Tonight's moon shines close to Regulus, the brightest star in the constellation Leo the Lion. 6 months from now, in late August, the sun will be in Leo. Here's something else you might not realize about the full moon. The full moon approximates the sun's position in front of the backdrop of stars 6 months from now.
Speaking of the sun's position in front of the stars, the sun today is shining in front of the constellation Aquarius. This constellation lies opposite, or 180 degrees, from Leo. So watch for tonight's full moon and contemplate the cycles of the heavens. Then go outside and watch as the Earth spins beneath the starry sky tonight. If you do this, you can see the full moon chase the star Regulus across the sky from dusk Monday evening until dawn on Tuesday. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science. We're at earthsky.org.
I know many of you are going to be interested in this next subject. Pennsylvania sits within a day's drive of 60% of the nation's population. Every year, $500 billion worth of goods and services move through our transportation system. Transportation is the bloodstream of our economy. If it fails, our economy fails. However, as you know, the average bridge in our state is 51 years old.
I'll tell you, you know, he can't claim ignorance. I mean, he understands it. 60% of the nation's population, a day's drive.
And I did the following. Everyone else seems afraid to say it, but Quavenzhané Wallace is kind of a C word. Right? Hashtag Oscars 2013. Reno. So, in the space of a couple of hours, the fantastically well-paid, underperforming host of the Oscars makes a joke about a 9-year-old someday having sex with George Clooney. While a website that is usually known for biting satire, but not just dirty-ass low blows, calls this child a C-word. I'm not going to say the word out loud. It makes me sick. But between these two stories, the elephant in the room about whether Manti Te'o likes other guys, and making nasty-ass jokes about the sexuality of a 9-year-old, do we get a little snapshot of how brutal so-called pop culture is, and where we stand in terms of trying to think about, even think about, concepts of equality in this country? Because even though the joke failed, and even though the Onion offered a seemingly profound apology, Steve Hanna, the CEO of the Onion, said, "I offer my personal apology and for the tweet that was circulated last night during the Oscars. It was crude and offensive, not to mention inconsistent with the Onion's commitment to parody and satire, however biting." Okay. "No person should be subjected to such a senseless, humorless comment masquerading as satire. The tweet was taken down within an hour of publication. We've instituted tighter Twitter procedures to ensure this kind of mistake does not occur again. In addition, we're taking immediate steps to discipline the individuals responsible. Ms. Wallace, you are young and talented and deserve better. All of us at The Onion are deeply sorry." Meanwhile, no apology forthcoming from Seth MacFarlane. Nor will there likely be one. But here, in 2013, in the second decade of the 21st century, we see on bright, vivid display what privilege really means. We saw it at the Oscars, and we see it in the NFL. We see that it does not attach to men of color or men of so-called suspect sexuality, and it doesn't even attach to 9-year-olds who have the, I guess what, within the broad cultural purview, who lack the privilege of being white and male, for she is black and female, and we can make sex jokes about her. So that's just a couple of more In Monday nominees. Let's go to Skype. Sandra is with us. Hey, Sandra.
Hey, Bob, how's it going?
Ah, pretty good, I think. I mean, well, you know, in context.
This is a feminist named Michelle Wallace. She kind of encapsulates the whole thing for me. She wrote, "African-American women, we have high visibility combined with an almost total lack of voice." And to me, that just sort of says the whole thing. I mean, it can't be any clearer to me than that statement. For black women or children or whatever, black females. And you know, the onion, that's completely a nightmare. I don't even understand what the hell was going on. They would never have tweeted that about that white girl a couple of years ago. She was 7 who was up for a nomination. You see what I'm saying? It's very deep what that was about. Because that wouldn't have been tweeted about some little white actress.
No, never in a million years.
In a million, not at all. And the fact that people associate that word with blackness is the issue here.
Well, that word is in this culture toxic. I know it's used more broadly in other cultures, but in this culture, it has only one meaning, and there ain't nothing nice about it. And it would never have been used against a little white girl. And you can't evade it.
That movie. I don't even know what movie the girl was in. So but it doesn't really matter to me. I am curious. What was the movie she was in?
Beasts of the Southern Wild. It's kind of a fable, if I understand correctly. It's set in Louisiana. It's about a little girl and her dying father.
Well, I mean, are there some sort of sexual themes in the movie? I mean, I'm just curious.
I don't know how you could do a sexual theme with a 5-year-old little girl.
Well, you know, who knows? I mean, anytime they have people of color involved with the Oscars, like Halle Berry, you saw the movie she was nominated for.
Yeah.
Huh? I mean, I'm just like sort of curious about, like, Precious. You saw that movie.
Sure.
I mean, you didn't see it, but you saw the scenes. I mean, anytime there's black people at the Oscars, they only seem to focus in on, quote, pathologies. I put that in quotes. So I'm just, you know, I just, because I didn't see any of this. I don't know anything about it. But I really don't understand what the guy was talking about at the Oscars, whoever that comedian was, or The Onion. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Except for the historical context of how black females are kind of dealt with in this society.
Well, and Seth MacFarlane made it worse because, you know, as one of the articles I read put it, you know, it could have been a joke about George Clooney's predilection for younger women. But then Seth MacFarlane turns around and throws him a mini bottle of liquor as if, you know, hey, buddy, yeah, ha-ha. It was sleazy, and this sleaziness has a way of coming up time and time again, Sandra.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, like I said, I didn't watch the Oscars. I mean, to be honest, I could care less. But I did see, you know, I was looking at my tweet feed, and I did see all that pop up, and I was just like, oh my God, you know, because that word is so strong, it is so over the top. That's why, and I'm thinking, a 9-year-old, when what possible world, except for the racialized nightmare that is the U.S., that would pop up? You see what I'm saying? And The Onion, whatever. I don't really know what. I guess they lost their minds for a few minutes there. Good night.
Yeah, because, I mean, it was, you know, it was that sort of dry stuff that The Onion does every now and then that, you know, she really is kind of a... But that's that wry wink and a nod kind of, I don't know, ironic young hip white folks humor. Is that what
that
is?
Well, yeah, exactly. But we're not, you know, we're not. Yeah, but it's not funny though. I mean, it's just, it's really disturbing. I can't, you know, white hipster, whatever, all that. None of that can justify.
No, that was not the way. It's beneath contempt.
Well, and it's just, you know, anyway, I mean, that was a bit special. And that Manti, I mean,
do you understand the point that I'm trying to make in that context?
What, with Tim Tebow?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, you know, how long did that preacher go for years? What was his name? You mentioned him.
Oh, Ted Haggard.
Yeah, I mean, you know, how long was he running that scam on folks? And, you know, nobody was asking a question about him. And I think that, you know, short of coming out, marching in the...
insult to the intelligence of Pennsylvanians. Fortunately, again, the importance of being vigilant and focused on not just presidents and governors, but of attorney generals statewide rose. But what would have happened if we had not won that attorney general race? That would be the law of Pennsylvania right now. Senior citizens would be made to suffer. This disingenuous, inconsistent projection would come to fruition. We would not recognize the money they said we would. One of the best operations in the country would have been trashed. But no, our attorney general stood up and said this is illegal. She gave specific reasons why. Not afraid to push back. Welcome to your new world, Governor Corbett.
Yeah. Last question I've got for you. You know, one of the big pushes over the next several months is going to be this assault on public sector pensions, as the Republicans want to do to the public sector what the private sector got away with to their employees over the last couple of generations. I'm curious where you see this going.
Well, I think we can tie this conversation into the fact that we have a governor who's been weakened by his failure to lead. We have a Republican Senate that is real risk of losing its majority. They know what a tinderbox issue this is, especially when they do not have the data objectively to back up what they're trying to sell to Pennsylvanians that have already had enough of their disingenuous propositions. They may try to put their toe in that water. They're going to be making a grave mistake. And if it's about holding on to the governor's mansion and holding on to the majority in the Senate and the House, they're at their own peril if they push this. We are prepared across this state back and fight back hard with real data to show why this is another abysmal attempt to take away from those who need it.
Yeah, because the way I see it is, look, and I sat and I listened to the hearings where even their experts said it was going to be much more costly to move to a defined contribution plan because you still have the liability. Instead of fixing the defined benefit plan, which they should have done a long time ago,
right,
they're coming up with a whole new thing that's going to cost us much more over the next couple in the generation. But it's, to them, pure ideology. Again.
You nailed it. That's what I was about to say. You anticipated my answer. It's not about the data. It's not about the stats. It's not about the objective evidence that tells you to go the other way. It's ideology and ideology alone. And fortunately for us here in Pennsylvania, our Commonwealth residents aren't buying what they're trying to sell. They're disconnected with the needs of our state, and we got to keep fighting. So, yeah, absolutely. It's ideology versus reality.
I'm right there with you. Jim Byrne, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Chairman of the Pennsylvania Democratic Party. Quick break. Back with Hour 2. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. I'm the talk.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
You are listening to the Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
The main focus of the mainstream media during the Academy Awards last night was on the red carpet and inside the Dolby Theater. But outside, more than 400 works were gathered. The workers were visual effects artists from Rhythm and Hughes Effects House. Rhythm and Hughes created the visual effects for multi-category nominee Life of Pi. Rhythm and Hughes recently filed for bankruptcy and laid off 250 workers. Those workers have subsequently filed a class action lawsuit alleging labor violations. The workers allege that the company didn't provide proper notice for the layoffs in violation of both federal labor laws and California's Worker Adjustment and Retraining Act. Under that act, employers must provide workers with a 60-day notice of mass layoffs. The suit is seeking to provide the workers with accrued vacation pay, unpaid wages, and unpaid commissions. More than 400 workers continue to be employed at the company, which 2 weeks ago was granted a court-approved $17 million loan from Fox and Universal Studios. That money is intended to help the visual effects shop complete work on films currently in progress. Nearly 6 months after Illinois watched tens of thousands of red-shirted teachers walk off the job in Chicago, the state could soon be seeing a similar sea of green. Contract talks between state workers and Illinois Governor Pat Quinn have stalled, and the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees said calling a strike of its members who can legally strike is a real possibility. AFSCME says the Democratic governor is seeking to change health care coverage for workers that could result in employees paying nearly $10,000 more over 3 years. The governor is also considering a wage freeze for state workers. Labor solidarity is strong in Illinois, so while AFSCME doesn't represent all of the Illinois state workers, the union has reason to believe other union members would refuse to cross their picket lines, a right afforded to unionized workers by law. In May, the Chicago Teachers Union could see a referendum on the effectiveness of last September's strike. According to the Chicago Tribune, candidates are lining up to challenge the incumbency of CTU President Karen Lewis's administration. That election will come in May. School counselor Tanya Saunders-Wolf will be running for the seat currently occupied by Lewis under the argument that the current president didn't properly use the leverage granted to her by the first teacher strike in 25 years. Saunders-Wolf told the Tribune that schools are still closing, teachers and staff are still being fired, and other parts of the old contract were lost. Saunders-Wolf told the Tribune that the strike should have been used to ensure a moratorium on school closings.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Well, tick-tock, the time is clicking down. Sequester is about, and I think it's going to happen. I don't see the political will. I think the Republicans really want to go and refight the fight they lost during the Clinton years when they shut down the government and everyone blamed, and rightly so, them. Again, this on them. And I look at this report that put out by the Army, who's saying, look, if this happens, if the Budget Control Act of sequestration happens, you're looking at 106,600 soldiers and civilians losing their job. Here in Pennsylvania, you're looking at almost 8,500 civilians being furloughed, 212 private sector jobs lost from reduction in military spending. The job losses go on. The hundreds of millions of dollars lost. Toby Hanna's going to lose $309 million. Fort Indian Town Gap, $19 million. Carlisle Barracks, about $9 million. These are the Army's numbers, not making this stuff up. The Army's saying this. And you've got the people who tell us that, you know, they're the people, the proud defenders. They're the Army people. The Republicans who, you know, that's supposed to be their shtick, right? Being okay with this. I got a problem, which is why I've asked Bill Murren, vice president of UAW 1193, up north in the Scranton area, Toby Hanna. He works for General Dynamics near the Toby Hanna Army Depot, set to lose $309 million. Bill, thanks for taking time for me.
Yeah, Rick, it's a pleasure to be on your show tonight. I work at General Dynamics and vice president of UAW 1193.
What happened? What happens to you if this sequester goes into place?
Well, what's going to we've already had some cuts since the 2010 Tea Party Republicans came in. We have about 130 of our members laid off, and we have about 100 active now. If the sequestration goes through, it's going to definitely have a negative impact on our plant. We haven't been able to quantify it yet, but there is, if I may, there is one thing that's directly responsible from this sequestration. On March 5th, we were going to have a visit from the head of Defense Logistics Agency. They're in charge of awarding the contract for all the spares for the military and all types of vehicles. Well, that visit has been postponed indefinitely, and
why?
it's due to the looming sequestration. Their travel budget has been cut in advance of that, so we were looking forward to showcase our employees and our facility, and looks like we're not going to get that opportunity directly because of the sequestration.
So because the transportation budget's been cut, 100 and some people may lose their jobs because the person who was going to come to evaluate, they can't get a transportation voucher to go do it. That makes no sense to me.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say that it would be that deep. I can't quantify what the impact would be, but it's definitely a negative impact, without a doubt.
And I look at this, and I, you know, the part of me goes, you know, I'm not surprised. You know, I'm not surprised at the scorched earth mentality of the people who are pushing this. And really, from what I've been seeing in the media, and maybe you've got a different thought, are actually welcoming it. I see some of the people like John Boehner and some of the others almost welcoming these deep, drastic cuts.
Let me speak to that. I agree with you. Like originally when this happened, as Jim Burns said, this sequestration was part of the Budget Control Act of 2011, and these cuts were put in there just in case the super committee couldn't get their job done. Well, obviously they didn't get it done because Pat Toomey was on that committee, and he's not going to agree to anything, especially raising taxes to help our country. So what happened was this is a result of the Republicans' refusal to raise the debt ceiling. We were ready to, the country was ready to go into default. We were downgraded because of the stunt in 2011. We went from a AAA to a AA+ with Standard & Poor's. So we've already suffered some damage from this, and they continue to keep pushing and pushing. And in the meantime, they're hurting the middle class, which is the backbone of our country.
Yeah, I agree. But looking at the reduction in jobs, how much of what the job loss you have is the reduction of what's going on in the Middle East that we're pulling out of Iraq, we're pulling out of Afghanistan? How much of that is responsible for the reduction?
I mean, obviously there is a peace dividend there, pulling out of Iraq. I mean, when we're able to end wars, we're not going to need the equipment to fight those wars. But we're always going to need equipment to be ready, to be strong. And also, when your defense budgets aren't being wasted on these false wars, you can build up state-of-the-art equipment to ensure that future conflicts, our warfighters have the best equipment available. Now, just for instance, we have M1A2s, which are a digital platform, which is state-of-the-art right now. And the National Guard, the Army Reserve, and the Marine Corps are using M1A1s. It's an inferior or it's an older model tank.
Right.
And those war fighters deserve the best equipment also. So instead of downsizing this and instead of being austere, it's basically what this is also like building your infrastructure. You're supplying your war fighters with the best equipment while you're providing a family-sustaining job to get us over this hump here.
Because I was going to ask you, what's this going to do to our readiness?
Oh, this will have a negative impact on our readiness, without a doubt. Actually, what's going on, since the 2010 Congress came in and what they've been screaming about, cut, the military is already... The Department of Defense and the Army, Secretary of the Army has said in an effort to cut costs, they're talking about suspending our program until 2017, which is really unrealistic because you're ready. We're part of the readiness command, and we need to be able to react to conditions on the ground. If our plant is shuttered or any of the plants in our We assembled the plants in Lima, Ohio. If any of these plants are put into a cold base or something, our readiness will be impacted. And I have a real short story. The strikers over in Afghanistan were being decimated by the IEDs, the improvised explosive devices.
Right.
And since then, the hull of the striker vehicle, which is what we built, has been redesigned. But in the short term, they needed a quick fix because our soldiers were being killed by these IEDs. So an aluminum ballistic plate was engineered practically overnight and delivered to theater in a matter of a couple months, and we were saving lives, you know, because we were there to be able to
You know, one of the things that worries me, and you know, I go, as we've had this brain drain, this drain of folks like you who can take a piece of metal and form it into something that's going to do that or really anything. I mean, as from a manufacturing standpoint, I think this country has lost so much. And to see the industry that's still producing things go away, I have a real major concern, both national security-wise and economically, because if you're not producing goods, if you're not adding value to things, you cannot possibly be the world superpower, getting all of your manufactured goods from somewhere else. We can't engage in a war if it need be by asking the Chinese to give us, more munitions and planes and smart chips and all of that. So for me, maintaining a manufacturing base is paramount.
Without a doubt, you can't outsource your own defense. So you have to keep your industrial base active and strong. And it's not like the days of Rosie the Riveter when you're able to convert automobile factories into making Jeeps and stuff like that. This is all specialized equipment, and it's all specialized armaments. And we have some of the greatest technology. We have four or five up to seven axis CNC machines. We are state of the art equipment. And the type of work that we do, we provide suspension packages for the M1 A2 Abrams and the M1 A1, and our vehicles are, it's the greatest tank in the world. Actually, during the Gulf War, the first Gulf War, the Abrams main battle tank was totally decimated the Republican Guard in the first Gulf War in less than 100 hours. You know, so. It's a force to be reckoned with, and it's something that it's a technology that can't be mothballed or set aside. You know, it's a national security issue.
Let me ask you this, Bill: if your plant is shuttered until 2017, is there something else that the plant could do? Is there any talk of potentially keeping those people? Because again, I worry about that brain drain. I worry about the skills, those skilled people going elsewhere. To me, that's a serious problem. Is there anything that could go into that plant that would be as productive and keep jobs, or do you see it being mothballed for that time?
Well, we're being proactive along those lines. We've gone to Volvo North America, which make the large tractor trailers. They're in Virginia. We visited their plant to try and get some commercial work. We've been talking with Unison Engines, that they make jet engines for General Electric, and we have the equipment that can be transitioned to make other products. You know, that is without a doubt a possibility. But we're tank builders, and we defend our country, and we build the best equipment for our war fighters. We've been doing it in this location since 1957. We have generations of employees there. We've had fathers, sons, and grandsons and grandchildren working there. So it's something that we're very proud of, our facility, our people, and our union. And we plan on being there a lot longer, we hope to, but we're being active and proactive, and we're trying to we're politically active. Actually, Congressman Cartwright was at our plant last Monday. He came up to visit us, you know, and when we were in Washington, we visited with him in February, and we invited him up to the plant. He came up, and he's an advocate for us, and he said that he's going to do all he can to modify or stop this sequestration, because it's not going to have any kind of a good impact on
the whole defense area. Yeah, we've had Congressman Cartwright on the program a number of times talking about that as well. Last question I've got for you, how are the other congressmen up in that area, Barlotta and Marino, how are they? I understand there was some interest on their voting history.
Well, actually, Congressman Marino and Barlotta on labor issues are very poor, very weak. I think Marino's this year's record is zero on labor issues. Barlotta is a little bit better. On labor issues, they've been very poor, but as far as our plant, Tom Marino was, we were during the 10th until we get till the redistricting. Now our plant is in the 17th. So Matt Cartwright is our congressman for our plant. But Marino and Barletta, when we reached out to them on the defense and the future of our plant, they were there for us. You know, I have to say that. But on labor issues, they're weak.
Now, I remember they both voted for the sequestration, and they both voted for the cuts in there. And then there was some weirdness around their rationale for voting for the cuts in that area as
yeah.
well. I remember that being an election issue. It is what it is.
So, yeah, they did vote for sequestration, and a lot of people voted for sequestration because it really never was supposed to come this far. Actually, you know, they blamed the president's sequestration, but 174 Republicans voted for it, 95 Democrats voted for it. Bob Casey voted for it also.
Yeah.
Because it was supposed to be a trigger to get them to the table to work this out, and it backfired.
And now
it looks like it's backfired.
And now, Bill, with the gun to our head, they're pulling the trigger.
That's right. It's crazy, isn't it, Rick?
Absolutely. Bill
yeah.
Murren, I appreciate the time. I wish you guys nothing but the best. In the coming days, weeks, and months, we'd love to hear what's going on up there. Hope all works out.
It's a pleasure speaking with you, and you have a good evening.
Thanks so much, Bill.
All right,
Vice President of UAW 1193 up in the Toby Hanna area. Quick break, right back. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. AFSCME, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
When President Obama called for raising America's wage floor to $9 an hour, GOP House Leader John Boehner attacked it like a gator on a poodle. Incredibly, he claimed that raising the wages of our country's most poorly paid workers would hurt, guess who? America's most poorly paid workers. This disingenuous pitting of poor people against themselves is derived from a corporate-manufactured myth that hiking the minimum forces small business owners to fire employees or even go bankrupt. When you raise the price of employment, he grumped, guess what happens? You get less of it. Well, guess again, John. That job killer fable has been debunked again and again by real-world experience. The pay floor has constantly been elevated by Congress, states, and cities, causing little to zero negative impacts on job numbers, but very positive results for employee morale, productivity, and turnover. It also generates a spending boost for local economies, especially for, guess who, small businesses. Obviously, the major impact of the raise is to lift the incomes of about 18 million hardworking people in low-wage jobs, allowing them to make a down payment on a used car or enroll in a couple of community college classes. Plus, it gives at least a token nod to the essential need of bridging America's dangerously widening chasm of economic inequality. This is Jim Hightower saying, the real shame in the Republican leader's attack is not his flagrant dishonesty, but the raw disdain it flings at low-wage workers, 60% of whom are women. The Boehners, Romneys, Koch brothers, and Wall Street billionaires see such people only in terms of their price tags, not in their value. That dehumanized contempt for the working class not only stains those who look down on the non-rich, but it's also holding back public policies to help America reach its full economic potential. And it is social dynamite.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
John, there's a real difference between venture capitalism and vulture capitalism. The fact of the matter is that he's going to have to face up to this at some time or another.
I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire.
It's one of the very few things that Rick Perry said that I actually agreed with. He was right. Romney was going to have to answer for what he had done all those years as the vulture capitalist, as the guy who took over these companies, saddled them with massive amounts of debt, ran them through bankruptcy, and profited mightily from it. You go back to the auto thing. I mean, the whole push for that was, his whole push to run them through bankruptcy was to steal those workers' pensions. And I've been saying for a while, you know, that's the push here on the state level. It really is. The push is to be able to steal those teachers' pensions. The push is to be able to steal those state workers' pensions and say, hey, you the taxpayers, you benefited from it. You watch. I mean, it's coming. It's part of it's not going to happen right now. No, no, can't do it right now. You got to lay the groundwork. We're at the beginning stages. And you go back to Uncle Milty. The ideas are taken from what's laying around. There are study. There are reports out there. There are think tank papers. You would not believe what the right has envisioned for this country. And they're open about it. I mean, that's the thing you got to give them credit for. They keep throwing it out there. They keep throwing it out there, which is why when I saw the story in France of the Titan International CEO saying, well, you're lazy and what do you think, I'm stupid and you people are lazy and you don't want to work and you and your rules and your so-called workers. I truly believe that's calculated. That's to open that door and start that dialogue. And you know, they're going to take a beating for it on the short term. But you keep hammering it enough, you keep spending money on it enough, and, you know, it is what it is. Which is the groundwork that's been laid for the last 30 years in this country. 40, 50 years. It's that constant message. That constant message that, you know what, these are the people who know what they're doing. The Romneys know how to, they know how to run the economy. We just need to give them more. And the reason it's not working is we haven't got them enough. And we haven't made those people at the bottom desperate enough. That's how this game's played. And you know that. The question is, how do we get all of us to know that? Because while they may have more money, while they may have the ability to buy more TV and more radio ads and billboards, we have out-procreated them. There are more of us. And if we sit and we look at, you know, the simple knowns of my grandfather's generation, which is exactly who crashed their economy. You know, they knew who brought down the global economy back during the Depression. Same people who did it to us in 2008. And you look at this whole push right now. I mean, our governor has proposed spending $1.8 billion over the next 5 years on a need that he himself, his own commission, his hand-picked minions, the people that he said, these are the people that are going to really get to the bottom of this for me. They hold my same ideology. They said, about this time, we're going to need $6.5 billion. So what do you think is going to happen? A couple of things are going to happen. You're going to see an assault on workers' rights. They're going to go after the prevailing wage, because you know, hey, you know, those rich people, those rich workers, boy, that's killing us. Why should we pay $10 an hour to a guy, you know, shoveling dirt? We should pay a minimum wage. Why should we pay a skilled stonemason $18, $20 an hour when we can get him for $12? Because we can depress things so much. And I guess the question comes, you know, what society do you see this, where do you see us going? Should government be the leader of the race to the bottom? Should our government investment, the dollar that we spend, should that be what we use to destroy all of the conditions of for everyone, or should it be what begins to raise us all up? And this is very much an ideological thing for the right wing. And I don't know that there's a wage low enough that the right wing is willing to say, well, that's right, that's about right. They keep talking in terms that are not quantifiable. Well, I just want equilibrium. It's what the job should be, what it should pay. Which I think is exactly what the prevailing wage law says. It's the wage that's paid. It's the prevailing wage. If there are 10 people and 10 people get $10 an hour, the prevailing wage is $10 an hour. And the right wants you to believe, well, that's the union wage, and we end up having to pay too much for a roofing project. I had to pay $40,000 for a roofing project. Understand this. And this is really the point. With all of the rhetoric that's being thrown around and this nonsensical belief that we're gonna save 30% on building costs, you're not. There have been studies done. When you do away with prevailing wage, when you do away with the bidding, certain parts of the bidding process, when you do away with the protections we have in place, what you end up with, and this is not rocket science, this is basic human nature, what you end up with are projects that cost more, because we've seen this, we saw it during the Ridge years, saw it in Ohio. Things cost more, and things break more, and it costs more long term. My problem with going after and destroying prevailing wage and going after and destroying the base that keeps an industry going is that you end up with transient labor. You end up with workers from other places whose kids aren't sitting in those classrooms, whose wives aren't working or husbands aren't working in that office building or that hospital. What you have are people who go, you know what, I got a crummy job for a short period of time. I don't care really what I leave behind, just as long as I get mine and go. And we're seeing that in the Marcellus shale fields. And we, as a society, we're the ones who are going to have to figure this stuff out and say, you know, this is the, you know, I sat in on the one hearing that Daryl Metcalf led. And it was painfully apparent to me that he is a true believer in government as the weight, as the heavy weight that leading us to the bottom. Instead of being the one that rises us up. And what I know that if a construction worker's got a couple of bucks in his pocket, he's going to spend that in the local economy. I know if a local laborer or a local pipe fitter or a local carpenter, they got money in their pocket, they're going to spend it in the local economy, and that is a good thing for everybody. And the studies are in. The reverberation effect, or as Obama's guy called it, the ricochet effect, it's there, undeniable. And all this is it's not going to cost us less. All this is a massive redistribution of wealth. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
Buy the stuff you love with retailers' credit cards. Ditch their high interest rates with the help of PSECU. Move those balances to the PSECU Visa with no transfer fee and a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through December 31st, 2014. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pseCU.com/visa for complete program details. Whatever new stuff you bought last year with retailers' high-interest credit cards, let PSECU help you get a fresh new start. Move those balances to the PSECU Visa with no transfer fee and a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through December 31st, 2014. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pseCU.com/visa for complete program details. This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Earth, Sky.
Monday, February 25th. Today's full moon is the third full moon after the December 21st solstice.
In North America, we call it the Sap Moon, Lenten Moon, Crow Moon, or Worm Moon. There are many more names for full moons. Come to EarthSky.org.
Watch for tonight's moon to rise in the east around the time of sunset, climb highest up for the night around midnight, and set in the west Tuesday morning around sunrise.
Tonight's moon shines close to Regulus, the brightest star in the constellation Leo the Lion. 6 months from now, in late August, the sun will be in Leo. Here's something else you might not realize about the full moon. The full moon approximates the sun's position in front of the backdrop of stars 6 months from now.
Speaking of the sun's position in front of the stars, the sun today is shining in front of the constellation Aquarius. This constellation lies opposite, or 180 degrees, from Leo. So watch for tonight's full moon and contemplate the cycles of the heavens. Then go outside and watch as the Earth spins beneath the starry sky tonight. If you do this, you can see the full moon chase the star Regulus across the sky from dusk Monday evening until dawn on Tuesday. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at EarthSky.org.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
I'm an innocent bystander.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. So it's been almost 3 years now since the Deepwater Horizon explosion that took the lives of 11 workers, spewed an estimated 4.9 billion barrels of oil into the Gulf of Mexico, and now the trial to decide, well, you know, how much is it going to cost? What are the civil penalties going to be? The trial began today. You know, again, almost 3 years. It looks like the wheels of justice, they absolutely do grind slowly, which is why I've asked Cherie Foytens, who has been nice enough to come and talk to us about this over the years. Three years, Cherie. It doesn't seem that long.
No, it does seem that long. It's been three long, arduous years we've been fighting this battle to bring BP to justice and get the truth out.
And how do you see this going on the first day? I understand it was just opening statements. What did you hear?
It was, but it was great. I mean, Luther Strange, who's the Attorney General for Alabama, spoke first and poignantly. You know, he said that there were two basically points that the DOJ to be able to summarize, and one was that the spill was predictable and preventable, and that's very true, and that BP's culture of corporate callousness towards the Gulf is actually what caused the spill, which is absolutely true. So I think they came out of the box strong, and I'm really looking forward to tomorrow. We're going to have some testimony from Robert B. and some other folks that have been studying this for the entire 3 years, and I'm really looking forward to the fact that this, I'm so happy this is going to trial, and that all this information is going to come out and be put in the public, hopefully to counteract some of the just PR campaign that BP's been holding on to for the last, you know, 3 years, saying that everything's good and happy and wonderful down here, when we all, the people that live here, we know that's not the case.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the advertisements that are all over CNN and all over the news networks, boy, they cleaned everything up and everything's, you know, we upheld our promise and everything's wonderful now, so let us go back to drill, baby, drill.
Man, I wish that was the case. You know how I would love to be able to say BP did the right thing and they cleaned this up and they changed their safety culture and everything's going to be okay now? But, I mean, the truth is we have oil coming in all the time, you know. I mean, 30 miles outside of Barataria Bay today, I read where there's, you know, fresh oil coming in. And then every time there's a little storm like there was today, we have cow patty-sized tarballs that break up from, you know, right offshore and come in. So And also, you know, we have impacted wildlife. We're continuing to see devastation as far as the dolphins, the crustaceans, the oysters are gone. I mean, this is just the Katrina that keeps on coming, basically. You know, we can't get out from under this down here. And, you know, the fishing industry, and especially in South Louisiana, has been devastated. We have people that haven't been able to get back to work and still haven't been able to claim funds from BP. So everything's in a mess. I'm really glad to see this trial going forward because, you know, whatever happens here is going to be able to help those people on their cases, you know, to find some kind of recompense and hopefully get back on their feet again.
Yeah, I mean, I got to be honest. There was part of me that thought this day would never come because, you know, they would sign some, okay, we were responsible. Here's a couple $1 billion, a slap on the wrist, all's forgiven, all's forgotten. And the people, you know, like you and the people who are in the fishing industry left out in the cold and screwed.
Well, that's kind of been their history, right? They did that in Texas City. They did that in Prudhoe Bay, Alaska, where they spilled 200,000 barrels and kind of walked away from it. They did it in the Caspian Sea right before the Deepwater Horizon blew up. Exact same situation. So we had our fingers crossed the whole time, but I'm telling you, it's been a lot of hard work from everywhere, from the citizens to the regional groups here that have been pushing. We were in D.C. last week, had a letter signed by 47 groups, local as international, big groups like 350 down to, you know, Gulf Restoration, and we all signed this letter saying we want to go to trial. There is no doubt that this is gross negligence, and we deserve all of that money to restore our Gulf Coast.
Yeah, and beyond that, to see the practices so that we can begin to regulate exactly what they did wrong, all of the abuses, and to make sure that from now on there's someone on the beat paying attention.
Oh, absolutely. We are talking about life here. That's the number one issue that we have. We want to protect our workers, protect our wildlife, protect our ecosystem, and protect our families and communities. That's the number one issue. It's like, it reminds me of the shirt waste factory back in the early 1900s and how after it went to civil trial was when we really saw an overhaul of safety within factories as far as they stopped chaining doors and they had to have fire exits and things like that. We're hoping, the same thing happens here as far as offshore drilling goes, that there are some kind of mechanism where these workers, in this case, I mean, they reached out for 8 weeks prior to that explosion to try to get help and couldn't get it. I mean, everything's going to be brought out in this trial. And we're hoping that there's some kind of mechanism put in place where these people have a place to go, that they can be safe, and they can protect themselves.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. At the end of it, it's a failure all along the line because, as we learned during that, with the swinging door of regulators going from government to industry, and this is all part of that, in my view, that the Mineral Management Service, they were literally in bed with the people that they were supposed to be overseeing, and you go, there's got to be a clear dividing line, and part of it to me is closing that swinging door.
Oh, I totally agree. Taking the money out of it, you know, and getting people in there, and I like the fact that they've separated that now, but I still feel like we need people in there that know this industry, know how to deal with this industry, and who are just honest. We need some honest folks, you know, in BOEMRE now. I mean, that's what we need.
What do you say to the people who would say that BP's been punished enough? They've paid $24 billion in cleanup costs, all of the loss of revenue. They've been punished enough.
I'd say you need to tell that to the kids that are still sick from the chemicals that they sprayed out there who have asthma attacks now and can't go play. You need to say that to the fishermen who can't fish anymore, the oystermen who have no oysters. You know, you need to say that to the indigenous peoples that are losing their land at an accelerated rate. What they did to our Gulf was decimated, and they deserve, you know, accurately to have to pay that price and that penalty.
Now, is the spot where the explosion happened, is that still leaking?
There is still oil out there, and we have had scientists who fear that possibly the containment efforts have caused a natural seepage to get wider. So we're constantly, you know, if you want to look up On Wings of Care, Bonnie Shoemaker, who is a great resource for the Gulf Coast, she flies over every once in a while, and she's been on network television and showed where there's fresh oil that's coming from there pretty regularly, large slicks, 8 to 10 miles wide.
That is huge.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is not over. And like I said, you know, whether they go to trial and they end up getting $4,000 a barrel in fine or $1,000, if they're found grossly negligent or not, this is something that the Gulf Coast is going to have to continue to deal with for decades to come, looking at other oil spills. And this was the largest ever. We can pretty much imagine that at least for the next 3 decades, there will be children going to the beach and coming back with oil stuck to their feet.
That's incredible. And, you know, I go back to when the hearings were going on, and the Texas Congressman Joe Barton apologized to the CEO of BP that he believed that we were shaking them down, that our government was shaking BP down to clean up the mess that they created and make right all that they had wronged.
Yeah, that makes me sick, too, like just the disconnect of some of these politicians to life here on the ground. I remember back in 2010, I'd asked the president to come back down without BP so that we could actually show him, you know, what was actually going on. And in fact, you know, last year that we went all the way to London, I didn't go, but, you know, friends of mine went all the way to London, asked the, you know, at the shareholders meeting, asked them to come down. They promised that they would come down and tour the Gulf Coast with us so we could show them where we were still being impacted. And if they didn't, they still haven't done that. It's almost time for the next shareholders meeting.
Yeah, but, you know, the thing is that doesn't play into the PR campaign. And they, they spent tons of money telling us everything's okay. And, you know, being where we are in Pennsylvania, you know, I'm seeing what I'm seeing in news reports and what I'm seeing on the for-profit media. Everything looks great down there. They show happy families. They're swimming. Everything's wonderful. The tourism bureaus are saying everything's great, but what I'm hearing from you, not so much.
I think Garrett Graves, who's the coastal restoration person for the state of Louisiana, said it best, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said, you know, they can buy all the smiling faces to put on TV that they want to, but the truth of the matter is, you know, the Gulf Coast has been dealing with this for 3 years. We will be dealing with it for a lot longer than that. And there continues to be oil. There continues to be dead dolphins coming in. There continues to be people sick from their so-called cleanup, and especially our cleanup workers. So this is not going away. And I hate to be the person to bust the bubble, but whatever they're putting on those commercials, I've seen them too, is just lies. And it makes us sick here to sit and watch those and know the truth. And know when we go down there that we're stepping through tar balls and dead things that are on the beaches.
What do you say to someone, because we're going through our own drilling here with the fracking and the Marcellus Shale. What do you say to somebody who says, well, you know, a little disaster like that every once in a while, it's just the price of doing business, and it's just another cost in the equation?
I would say to them that they really need to look this in the eye and educate themselves, because once something catastrophic like this happens, your life will change forever, and you will never be able to look at your government the same again, and you will never be able to know that your children are not breathing in the cancer causing carcinogens. And I tell anyone who's dealing with this situation in their area or who's even thinking about it to just think about the true cost of oil. And honestly, that's your children's future.
Wow. Because, you know, I look at this and I wonder, what were you doing before this spill happened? I mean, you can't imagine, I can't imagine that you saw yourself as somebody out in the front of this, taking the lead and fighting back against a company like the size of BP.
No way. Like, no way. If someone had told me 4 years ago this is what I'd be doing, I'd have called them crazy. I mean, I'm a mother of six. My husband's an oil worker. Everybody in our town is, you know, an oil working family. We're like the coal families of Appalachia. I mean, everybody works within the industry in some way. If someone had told me that, you know, your life was going to change in this amazing, and it has been amazing. It's been such a journey of education and just realizing what we have lost and what I feel a responsibility at this point to warn other people and to come out and to tell the truth. And I was just a mom, man, and I'm still just a mom, but I'm a mom doing everything I can to fight for my kids and fight for the communities that I love.
And it's got
to
give.
And I really, man, it's just survival at this point. We get up every day and we try to survive this.
Last question.
3 years later.
Last question I've got for you. What has Jindal and the state done to help or detract? I mean, have they been good or bad on this issue? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, any politician's going to go to bat for as much money as they can. So at this point, yeah, they're totally on our side with trying to get as much clean water fines as they can to help with restoration, also to help with economics. I don't know where else the money's going. And that's great. That's good. But when it comes to being on the ground, I wish that they would get out a little bit more with the people and be able to provide, if nothing else, just, you know, we got a 10-acre hole out here in Bayou Corn that's made by the oil industry as well. You haven't heard about it probably, but it's growing. And Governor Jindal has yet to visit that site. These people have been out of their home for almost a year now. So our representation does what they can do to get as much money as possible. But to tell you the truth, my opinion is they're all pretty much in the pocket of the oil industry anyway.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Sharif Hoylands, I appreciate the time. As this continues, we'd love to have you back and giving us updates.
Great. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Sharif. Amazing story. Quick break, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Your thoughts after this.
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children. AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Buy the stuff you love with retailers' credit cards. Ditch their high interest rates with the help of PSECU. Move those balances to the PSECU Visa with no transfer fee and a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through December 31st, 2014. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit PSECU.com/visa for complete program details. Whatever new stuff you bought last year with retailers' high-interest credit cards, let PSECU help you get a fresh new start. Move those balances to the PSECU Visa with no transfer fee and a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through December 31st, 2014. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit PSECU.com/visa for complete program details. This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
If you take what I would call a reasonable scientific approach to that, we believe those consequences are manageable. They do require us to begin to exert or spend more policy effort on adaptation. And as human beings, as a species, that's why we're all still here. We have spent our entire existence adapting. Okay, so we will adapt to this.
Yes, Rex. Rex Tillerson, the head honcho there at ExxonMobil. Adaptation, I love that. Well, we'll adapt. Yeah, we can drink oil. Nothing wrong with that. A little oil in the water is good for the Casperatas. It's good stuff. Yeah. And you look at almost three years, and you know, what we're fed, what we're shown, Everything's wonderful. They went in, they cleaned everything up, and they show pictures of nice little birds and nice fish. Everything's wonderful. All while they're pushing drill, baby, drill. And the reality is, you know, drill, baby, drill is not the answer. We need vision. We need somebody who's, you know, they talk about the Keystone Pipeline. And I love this. Well, we need to produce our own energy, which I'm in favor of. And then they propose something that is going to ship it right out of the country. And I've said before, I would be in favor of the Keystone Pipeline if they would move it to Chicago. Just run it right to Chicago, refine it there, and it stays here. And then, if you believe it, which I don't, then you bring the price of oil down. It's not going to happen because it's an international commodity. And understand why the price of oil is going up. It is very simple. More people are coming online. More people are living like us. The Chinese, like it or not, they're increasing the number of automobiles that they're buying. And I saw this thing today that looked at the production of autos in China. In 1990, the country of China produced just over 500,000 vehicles. The U.S., somewhere almost 10 million. Japan, 13.5 million. By 2000, 10 years later, you saw the Chinese production go up 400%. U.S. production ticked up a little bit, almost 13 million. Japan down around 10 million. Here we are, 2011, the last number for it that they had. Chinese production had gone from 500,000 in 1990, 400% increase in 2000 to 2 million, a 900% increase to over 18.5 million. U.S. production fell to 8.6 million. You need to know why the price of oil is going up, the price of gas is going up. It's because, like it or not, more people in China are driving and we're fighting for the same commodity. It's that lesson of supply and demand. And when you have global corporations like BP and Exxon and Royal Dutch Shell and all of these global corporations, they don't care if the single mother in Sheboygan can't afford to put gas in her car to get to work because gas is $4 a gallon. Could care less. All they care about is, hey, gas is $4 a gallon over there, and we're getting more of it. And, oh, by the way, we're getting huge subsidies from your government, too. And I look at this, and I go, you know, with all of the money that we're spending, can't we, with just some vision, think about what the future is going to be? Understand, as China continues, and look, it's going to continue. You're talking about a country of I've seen numbers between 1.5 and 2 billion people. Their margin of error in their census is larger than the U.S. population. Understand that. And as more of those folks start demanding to live like we do, it's going to continue to go up. It's going to continue to go up. And what's going to happen? The price is going to go up and up and up and up and up, and it's going to eat up more of the stagnant wages we have. So for me, some vision for the future. And I was having lunch the other day with a guy who was telling me about the IBEW local out near Pittsburgh, who their training facility. They actually train their electricians to be able to work on the hybrid cars, the electric cars, to work on solar charging stations. Because the future, like it or not, is everyone has a solar charging system at their house that they plug their car into. That's the future. That you have the battery available. And, you know, sorry, auto mechanics, you're probably going to lose out on this. Because it's going to be an electrician that's going to fix your car along with a mechanic. That's the future. So instead of being slaves, and I kind of agree with Tillerson on the point that adaptation, let's adapt to what the future holds. Instead of being slaves to what the past is giving us, why not say, you know what, we need to embrace being really, truly, honestly energy independent. Because even if we're drilling more here, which we are, we've never had more needles in the ground than we've got right now. We have never produced more oil than we've produced right now. And the reason our trade deficit is lower this year than it was last year is because of that. Those petrodollars aren't leaving. They aren't going to OPEC. They're just going to BP. So I look at this and I go, you know, there's an opportunity here. There's an opportunity on so many veins. An opportunity to get off oil, to say, you know what, international community, God, you have it. We're going to still drill. Sure, it's going to happen. You can't get away from that. And you know what? Let's have a trade surplus. Let's think beyond, I just want to be more energy independent. Well, I go, okay, if we're going to be energy independent, let's be energy independent and export the stuff, the dirty stuff, and let's figure out how to have an economy that really, truly is independent. And the problem with that, and I've said this before, the problem with that vision is that if you have a solar charging station at your house for your car, you don't need gas stations. And that's going to be bad for the oil industry. You don't have someone that you're paying on a regular monthly basis. Same reason that the right has not embraced people putting solar panels on their house. And funding the bill, helping. You know, I had Michael tell me, well, you know, that was heavily subsidized. Yeah, but it's good for the nation. And the more we were to subsidize it, the more the cost would come down. You know, we've been through this. It's absolutely just, and this whole thing, it just blows my mind. Anyway, this weekend, if you need something to do, Keystone Progress is having their Pennsylvania Progressive Summit. Starts Friday at 4 o'clock. State Senator Dalen Leach is going to have a reception Friday evening. All day Saturday, there are shops and workshops and opportunities to network. Saturday night, 7:30 to 10 p.m., 100,000 Poets and Musicians for Change. They're going to have their sing-along at the Cornerstone Coffee House, 2133 Market Street in Camp Hill. I hope folks come out there hoping all is well and hoping that folks can stop by and sing along too. Solidarity Forever is on the song list. Joe Hill's Power in the Union. Lots of things to see, lots of things to do. Looking forward to seeing you. I will stop there as well. Gonna take a quick break, right back with hour three. Stick around.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
The main focus of the mainstream media during the Academy Awards last night was on the red carpet and inside the Dolby Theater. But outside, more than 400 workers and their supporters were gathered. The workers were visual effects artists from Rhythm & Hughes Effects House. Rhythm & Hughes created the visual effects for multi-category nominee Life of Pi. Rhythm & Hughes recently filed for bankruptcy and laid off 250 workers. Those workers have subsequently filed a class action lawsuit alleging labor violations. The workers allege that the company didn't provide proper notice for the layoffs in violation of both federal labor laws and California's Worker Adjustment and Retraining Act. Under that act, employers must provide workers with a 60-day notice of mass layoffs. The suit is seeking to provide the workers with accrued vacation pay, unpaid wages, and unpaid commissions. More than 400 workers continue to be employed at the company, which 2 weeks ago was granted a court-approved $17 million loan from Fox and Universal Studios. That money is intended to help the visual effects shop complete work on films currently in progress. Nearly 6 months after Illinois watched tens of thousands of red-shirted teachers walk off the job in Chicago, the state could soon be seeing a similar sea of green. Contract talks between state workers and Illinois Governor Pat Quinn have stalled, and the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees said calling a strike of its members who can legally strike is a real possibility. AFSCME says the Democratic governor is seeking to change health care coverage for workers that could result in employees paying nearly $10,000 more over 3 years. The governor is also considering a wage freeze for state workers. Labor solidarity is strong in Illinois, so while AFSCME doesn't represent all of the Illinois state workers, the union has reason to believe other union members would refuse to cross their picket lines, a right afforded to unionized workers by law. In May, the Chicago Teachers Union could see a referendum on the effectiveness of last September's strike. According to the Chicago Tribune, candidates are lining up to challenge the incumbency of CTU President Karen Lewis's administration. That election will come in May. School counselor Tanya Saunders-Wolf will be running for the seat currently occupied by Lewis under the argument that the current president didn't properly use the leverage granted to her by the first teacher strike in 25 years. Saunders-Wolf told the Tribune that schools are still closing, teachers and staff are still being fired, and other parts of the old contract were lost. Saunders-Wolf told the Tribune that the strike should have been used to ensure a moratorium on school closings.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. You know, we've been watching all across the country as workers have been saying, you know, the CEO taking as much, filling his pockets, we should be able to share in the wealth. And I look at McDonald's. A frontline worker there is going to have to work 1 million hours to earn what the CEO takes home in a year. 1 million hours. Think about that. And as I look at this, I'm of the mindset there's only so much of you-know-what people are willing to eat, which is why I'm glad to see people taking to the streets and saying enough is enough. And in Minneapolis right now, retail cleaning workers across the city who work at Target and Kmart and other stores are about ready to go on strike tonight, go out to the picket lines and start to say, hey, you know, enough is enough. And I've got one of those workers here on the line. I've got Royce Reuter. He is a worker at Kmart. Royce, thanks for taking time for me.
My name is Royce, and I work at Lakeview Kmart.
How long have you been with Kmart? How long have you been doing what you're doing?
5 years at the Lakeview Kmart.
5 years. And if you don't mind, you know, where on the wage scale would you find yourself? Are you close to minimum wage, a bit above that? Where are you?
Well, down. I've been the lowest job I've ever worked for.
Yeah, and the thing is, I mean, you go in, you punch the clock, you work your 40 hours, you work your butt off, you clean up after everybody else, and what?
And still the same pay.
There's something serious.
Yeah, they promise, and they still not paying us, you know.
Something seriously wrong with that.
They've been promising me 3 years for a raise, and I still haven't got it.
Jeez. And why are you going on? Why the picket? Why the strike tonight?
We want to tell these folks that we mean what we mean, you know, and then let them know that we're not playing with them anymore.
And as I understand, two workers were fired for signing petitions to say that they wanted a union, they wanted some type of a contract, they wanted some agreement.
Yes, that's what I heard. And also, you know, like I was threatened, like me going on strike tomorrow, I was threatened I'll get a no call, no show write up, stuff like that. So
and
we're not coming in tomorrow. Right. Strike.
And this is a contractor for Target, right?
Yes.
You know, what's interesting to me is, and this is one of those third-party systems that corporate America has set up to where once workers start to say, hey, you know what, I'd like a better living, I'd like to be able to support my family, they just do away with the contractor, which is why, as I've been seeing going on around the country in cities across the country where they're saying the entire industry should be covered under a contract and there's a floor under everyone's feet. And, I see in Minneapolis, like many other places, the industries are fighting back against it.
And that's the way we got to do it. You know, it's the only way we could do it. You know, to fight against back with these big corporations.
So what are you hoping to gain out of this? What at the end of this, if you got everything you wanted, what would that look like?
It would make us very happy. We get what we want.
And what would that be?
You know, better. You know, the wage is better. You know, the environment would treat us better. Because you know, right now we're not getting like we're nobody. You know, in the store. So that's that would help us out. You know, get to know us. You know.
Yeah, I interviewed a woman the other night who works at the Castlewood Country Club out in California, and she said, you know, it doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter if you sweep floors, clean toilets, whatever. Work has dignity. Work should be respected, and you respect people by treating them decent, by giving them a decent wage, and making sure that their families are well taken care of, either through wage, through health care, through some retirement security, those kind of things. That, to me, is what respect is on the job.
Yes, it is. We like to go home the same way. We like to go home not to be worried how to pay a bill, or if tomorrow or another day we're going to get cut, or they're talking about cutting our paycheck down again or something like that, you know. So that's what they're doing now. They're trying to cut it out, putting people down part-time, and it's just getting worse and worse.
Yeah, and the reason that they're doing it, obviously, is because they can, right? Because they don't have to sit down and negotiate with you. And this is why I tell people what we need to have is we need to have every worker with a contract. So everything's written out. You know what the conditions are. You know what the contract is, and it can't be just changed at the whim like they're trying to do, like they've done to so many millions of workers in this country since the Great Recession.
I've been going to cleaning for 30 years, and like I'm saying, it's going getting worse and worse. I was getting paid more 10 years ago than what I'm getting paid now.
In actual dollars, not in wage inflated dollars, right?
In dollars, yes.
You know, I know the same thing. You know, I back in the late 80s, I was throwing boxes on a shipping dock, making $16 an hour. Here are people working on those docks doing the same exact job. Here, 20-some years later, are making like $12.50, $13 an hour.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. And I'm trying to fight for other people that just got in to clean other jobs that they're getting treated wrong, you know, and I think it's wrong.
And I think that's an excellent point, that you want to make it better, not just for yourselves, but for the next generation, for the people coming up behind you who are going to need those jobs to take care of their family.
Yes.
So tomorrow, tonight's the rally you guys are having, I guess tomorrow the picket starts, correct?
Yes.
And how long is this going to go, do you think?
As long as we can do it, you know, we can keep doing it, you know. And show these folks what we mean, you know. And, you know, I know it's going to be hard on a lot of these folks' paychecks and stuff like that, but we got to stand up for ourselves. And, and I'm there to stand up for them and everybody else, and hopefully they'll stand up for me. So.
Yeah, and what kind of support are you getting in the community? Because with any of these strikes, it's the community that supports you. It's, you know, it's the faith community. It's small businesses in the area who want to see you do well, because if you've got money in your pocket, you're going to help the small business owner as well, because you spend your money there.
Yes. You know, and you can't spend it. You don't have to, you know, to spend it, you know.
Yeah.
And right now we just live in check by check, you know, we do got to put money up. Because we don't know when we'll have a next check, you know.
Yeah. You know, I remember back when I first started throwing boxes on the shipping dock, I had an old timer who took me under his wing, and he said, you know, Rick, you gotta put some money away in the bank. Put 6 months of bills away, because you never know, at the drop of the hat, you may have to get on the picket line to defend what you have. And
right.
I think a lot of us have kind of gone away with that, away from that mentality of preparing for when I have to defend what it is that we've built. And I understand full well what you're going through, and I hope that the community supports you. I hope that you're able to get the support that you guys are going to need to win this battle.
I thank you, and I appreciate that.
Royce,
I think everybody out there just stand up with us. That's all I'm asking.
Is there any way for anyone who'd want to send any resources your way? Is there a website that people are going to?
Not right now. I really don't have one right now.
Okay, well, we'll make sure we get back at the opportunity to help out, because hopefully this doesn't go long. Hopefully, just a show of support. How many of your coworkers are going to be going with you? How is this looking from a unity standpoint?
Father, I know there's hundreds of us right now, so I don't know how many. I won't know until we get out there and see tomorrow.
Yeah, because the hope is what happens is you wake the employers up, and they go, you know what, we're gonna share a little bit of what we've been pocketing over the years and get this contract done.
Yeah, I hope so.
All right, Royce, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You know, I look at this, and I've said this before. You know, at the end of the day, what we have to be doing is we have to make sure that there's an opportunity for folks like Royce, people who are in that low-wage economy to be able to exist, to be able to survive, to be able to participate in the economy and to be able to, you know what, maybe live a little. And what I find really interesting is there's a segment of the population. I go back to my conversations with my uncle, who, like a lot of the mainstream right-wingers who say there should be no minimum wage, if Royce is desperate enough to work for a buck an hour, that's what we should get. And at times when you have high unemployment, the wages for everybody go down, except for the folks at the top, of course. Now, we all know that's a recipe for disaster. We all know that's trouble. Because when you take money out of people like Royce's pocket, the people who clean the stores and the people who do the low-wage work, you're taking money out of the local economy. That hurts everybody. And I understand we've got to have a very self-centered, narrow view of how things work. But understand, by taking money away from people at the bottom, you're really taking it away from people in the middle and upward. Because that downward pressure on wages, which is why the right is so adamantly opposed to an increase in the minimum wage. Because they know if the bottom goes up, everybody goes up a tick, just a little tick above. And if Rice gets a raise at the Target place or the Kmart or any of the other big box retailers, that means the people who are working at cashiers and as people stocking shelves, and they're going to want to raise. So they're going to have to make an example of these people, which is why it just blows my mind that this day and age, it's clearly a violation of the law to fire someone for signing a petition that says they would like to be part of a union or participating in this anyway. Two workers, evidently, and this is the story that I've been told. Two workers were fired after publicly speaking out and saying that they wanted to organize. This draws in the other question: how much intimidation are we willing to put up with on the job? How much say should the owners, the bosses, how much say should they have over what you do with your activities? It'll be interesting to see where this heads. And as it continues, we will make sure that we cover it and keep up, because I think these are important. I think it's important that we see the next, and I see these as the next generation of family sustaining jobs. They may not be now, but with a little effort, with a little work, with a little unity, a little solidarity, they sure can be. I'm gonna take a quick break, right back after this. Stick around.
Listening to the Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
When President Obama called for raising America's wage floor to $9 an hour, GOP House Leader John Boehner attacked it like a gator on a poodle. Incredibly, he claimed that raising the wages of our country's most poorly paid workers would hurt, guess who? America's most poorly paid workers.
This disingenuous pitting of poor people against themselves is derived from a corporate-manufactured myth that hiking the minimum forces small business owners to fire employees or even go bankrupt. When you raise the price of employment, he grumped, guess what happens? You get less of it. Well, guess again, John. That job killer fable has been debunked again and again by real-world experience. The pay floor has constantly been elevated by Congress, states, and cities, causing little to zero negative impacts on job numbers, but very positive results for employee morale, productivity, and turnover. It also generates a spending boost for local economies, especially for, guess who, small businesses. Obviously, the major impact of the raise is to lift the incomes of about 18 million hardworking people in low-wage jobs, allowing them to make a down payment on a used car or enroll in a couple of community college classes. Plus, it gives at least a token nod to the essential need of bridging America's dangerously widening chasm of economic inequality. This is Jim Hightower saying, the real shame in the Republican leader's attack is not his flagrant dishonesty, but the raw disdain it flings at low-wage workers, 60% of whom are women. The Boehners, Romneys, Koch brothers, and Wall Street billionaires see such people only in terms of their price tags, not in their value. That dehumanized contempt for the working class not only stains those who look down on the non-rich, but it's also holding back public policies to help America reach its full economic potential, and it is social dynamite.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Of course, if you missed any portion of our program, you can download the podcast there at the website or get the Stitcher app on your smartphone. Take the program on the go. As I mentioned earlier, this weekend, a lot going on. Keystone Progress is having their Pennsylvania Progressive Summit. Again, an opportunity for folks to get out and meet and greet. Their slogan, Fighting Back, Moving Forward. For more information, go to KeystoneProgress.org or PAProgressiveSummit.org. We've got links at TheRickSmithShow.com. And also, Saturday night, if you want to go out and you have a couple of drinks, maybe some coffee, you want to engage in the sing-along, 100,000 Poets and Musicians for Change are having a protest music sing-along at the Cornerstone Coffee House, 2133 Market Street in Camp Hill. I will be there for some time. Always enjoy a good sing-along. Why not? Also, the Keystone Progress Pennsylvania Progressive Summit going to be at the Harrisburg Hilton. And hopefully, no sinkholes. Just a hope. Because I look at this and I go, you know, what's it going to take? You know, $1.8 billion the governor's put forth over the next 5 years on a $6.5 billion need. And you go, we better be doing something. We better be doing it quick. Anyway, interesting law being proposed in Missouri. Missouri, like Pennsylvania, a lot of push for the No Rights at Work agenda, a lot of push to destroy workers' rights. Well, this Democratic representative thought, hey, you know what, this is what I would be doing if I were a Democrat here in Pennsylvania. You really don't have any chance of getting anything passed. The Republicans are never going to work with you. There's at least on anything that's going to benefit workers. This Democrat, a guy named Jeff Rorta, a Missouri House Democrat, introduced a bill on Friday. And it's in response to a bill that a Republican had put forth in Missouri that proposed, and I think we talked about this last week, that proposed that making any gun control measure, any gun law, would be an immediate you'd go to jail. Any bill that, and this is a bill, if you were to propose a piece of legislation, just bring it up, say, yeah, we should talk about this, propose a bill that would be along those lines of any gun control or any gun safety or any of that stuff, automatically jail. Well, this guy, you know, a good Democrat, says, you know what, why don't we propose something like that for you idiots who keep bringing up the attacks on prevailing wage, the attacks on collective bargaining. Let's put up a bill and do the exact same thing. Like there's this whole paycheck deception bill that's coming out. Oh, the Paycheck Protection Act. We're protecting your right to screw yourself. The bills are here. The whole right to work for nothing, that's here. All of this stuff, you know, all of the stuff we've talked about. I think it's worth talking about. Let's lock people up who propose that. I'm sure they'd get bail, but, you know, there's an idea. And maybe we should lock up anybody who proposes gutting social programs, you know, the ones who help the least among us. And someone sent me this email with a food stamp program for pets. Yeah, evidently there's a nonprofit, or they're struggling, they're trying to get a nonprofit charter to, this just blows my mind, to have food stamps for pets. So if you fall on hard times, you go and you apply online at this point. Folks make donations, and if you have a pet that you can't afford to feed, they're going to send you, you know, they're going to send you food. You know, little dog food. And originally, you know, I thought, well, you know, it's not a bad idea, until I read the person's email who said, maybe this is how we're going to end up feeding our poor. They can't, there'll be no more food stamps for people, so we're going to be saying, making up pets, to be able to feed folks. And, you know, when you've got, what, some 47 million people in 2012 who were on the food stamp program, and not because they're thrilled to be on it, but because it's a necessity, and you've got this ticking bomb about to, and it's going to go off. The question is how many of these folks at the bottom are going to be affected? And that's what bothers me. You know, I hear the bloviations of those who have much saying that those who have little are, well, they're lazy or they're shiftless. And it infuriates me on such a level. Because I remember as a kid growing up, and I'll never forget it. I'll never forget the first time I had to use a food stamp because my mother lost her job and there was literally nothing in the house. And I walked to the corner store to be able to buy bread and milk. And I remember that I had picked up one of the, has been a downfall my entire life, the peanut butter bars, the Little Debbie little peanut butter wafer bar things. And the woman behind the counter gave me such a raft of you-know-what and held up the line and made such a commotion and such a scene. I'll never forget that. And I never want anyone to have to go through that to be able to put food on the table. That's really not who we are. And it shouldn't. It's not who I believe we are. It's not who we should be. But, you know, I go back to that. I go back to those experiences. And I guess, you know, as you go through life, you have these things that go on. Instead of just saying, you know what, we're going to make sure that people get fed. We've got all of these loopholes and all of this, all of these hurdles. And the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania, well-funded right-wing sham group, or the way I see it. Since they won't tell me who their funders are, I can only imagine that they're the mouthpiece of the 1%, saying that there's a welfare cliff because there are people who, well, they don't want to get a raise and they don't want to work, and you know that mother who's making $55,000 or $60,000 a year, she doesn't want a raise because she's going to lose some benefits, which. I don't know about you, but in my neighborhood where I grew up, there were no single mothers making $60,000 a year. in my neighborhood where I grew up, there weren't people in that upper echelon. In my neighborhood, there were poor people. People who were dying to get a job. People who wanted a future. People who wanted opportunity. And you know what? They had to suffer the indignity of jumping through those hoops and filling out forms and going through every obstacle. And, you know, this recession, this latest massive recession has awakened a good number of people to how cumbersome, how difficult it is to go through these processes. And how all the hoops and the hurdles and all of this stuff, it's difficult. And it's degrading. And that's exactly how the right wants it. You know, if only it were that difficult and that cumbersome for the well-to-do to get their handouts, to get their welfare. If only it were that difficult for them to suffer just a little indignity. But I guess that's not possible because they're the ones who caused the problem. And when I look at this story about food stamps for pets, I'm going, well, you know, I'm all in favor of it. The pets got to eat too. But I know there's some right-winger out there somewhere going, that's what we should be doing with people stamps, people food stamps. It should be a voluntary donation thing through the churches. And again, I go back to my experience. If the churches could have done it, they'd still be doing it. But they can't. And at the end of it, what bothers me is when there is that church outreach, it often comes with, here's the food, but here's the book, and we're going to beat you and proselytize until you get any of that. Just my thought. Quick break, right back with Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
The 19th century saw regular work weeks of 70 hours or more. Many attempts were made to get legislatures across the country to pass maximum hour laws limiting the number of hours an employee could be compelled to labor. The first union victory in capping work hours was won by the building trades in 1840. They won a 60-hour week. In 1874, the state of Massachusetts became the first to pass a law mandating a maximum hours for women. Other states followed as union activists around the country fought to pass laws to protect workers. Their work stalled in 1905 when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled the New York Bake Shop Act unconstitutional, citing a sacred bond between master and employee and the liberty of contract. With this decision, the Lochner error, named after bakery owner Joseph Lochner, who had been cited, tried, and convicted of working employees beyond the 60-hour limit, began. This single decision opened the floodgates, allowing attacks on child labor laws, minimum wage laws, as well as maximum hour laws by corporate and anti-union interests. Only after President Franklin Delano Roosevelt threatened to enlarge the United States Supreme Court from 9 to 13 did the court do an about-face with regard to liberty of contract and what has been called a switch in time to save 9, ruling in West Coast Hotel versus Parrish that Elsie Parrish was indeed entitled to the state of Washington's minimum wage, regardless of what conditions she agreed to, marking the end of the Lochner era. FDR's New Deal policies helped workers reclaim lost ground in their fight for the American dream. The proposal and passage of the Fair Labor Standards Act, federally restricting weekly hours, mandating overtime pay, setting a minimum wage, and restricting the exploitive use of child labor, was an essential step forward for workers, families, and communities. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center of IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Choose of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. A lot of talk about meat cleavers. You know, the president said, you know, you can't take a meat cleaver to the budget. You know, the whole nine yards, deep, deep cuts, deep, painful. We've got a senator here in Pennsylvania, Scarnati, said, you know, we're already through the fat, the muscle, into the bone. Any more cutting? Well, it could really hurt somebody, according to Senator Scarnati. And I see this story, and I, you know, just a lot about meat cleavers, I guess. I saw this story today. Firefighters, Engine 9, Ladder 6, they're in New York City, the Chinatown section of Manhattan. On Sunday, saw a man hitting a woman with a meat cleaver. Ran to her aid, saved her life, held the guy in custody till the police came, saved her life. I wonder with all the sequester cuts, I wonder with all of the pain and suffering into the bone, what happens when the Republicans allow the meat cleaver to our budget and those firefighters are not on the job? What happens to that woman? What happens to society? But here we are, down to the wire. The tick, tick, tick. The clock is ticking. I've got Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, what's going on? Are we the ticking bomb? It's coming. The end is near.
Yeah, it is. The clock is ticking. The end is nearing. I mean, you know, today Janet Napolitano, the Homeland Security Secretary, showed up in the briefing room with Jay Carney. Last Friday it was Ray LaHood, Transportation Secretary. I think they're going to trot one out every day.
They should.
They should. Tomorrow President Obama goes to Newport News in Virginia so he can talk up military cuts. And John Boehner, not to be outdone, said, I think you'll enjoy this, the president says we have to have another tax increase in order to avoid the sequester. Well, Mr. President, you got your tax increase. It's time to cut spending here in Washington. Instead of using our military men and women as campaign props.
Oh, he didn't say that.
He did say
that.
Come on. That's your cue for the flight suit.
Yeah, I mean, in the big banner and the sock and the pants and the whole nine yards.
Yeah, that's your cue. I mean, he said that.
Well, I guess it shows that not only are the American people amnesiac, our politicians are as well.
Well, I don't know that the American people are amnesiac. We don't know how people reacted to him saying that. I suspect that people went, oh, come on, really? We all know that that President Bush jumped out, you know, of whatever he jumped out of in a flight suit onto a flight deck. We all know he did that. Everybody knows he did that.
And then said, well, you know, they were so happy to see me. They put that banner right there, right in the best possible photo line. You know, it just appeared. It was like Mitt Romney's magical screen. You just push the buttons and it just appears.
It was magic. It was magic. It's amazing. It was a magic thing.
Magic. It's amazing how all these magical things happen to folks like that. Never happens to me. The photo op in my, you look at my photo album, always off center.
You know, it doesn't happen to me either. Why doesn't it happen to us?
We don't have the money to hire advanced people so that things happen just out of thin air. It just happens.
Oh, it was the advanced people. It wasn't really magic.
Well, the Romneys and the Bushes of the world, they look at those advanced people like fairies and, you know, imaginary people. They're imaginary friends who just do things for them out of the goodness of their heart because they like them so much.
Oh, that's what it is. That's what it is. There you go.
But, you know, I look at Boehner, and Boehner's set to lose his state is set to lose a ton of money for education.
Yes.
And a ton of money in defense. I mean, these are real jobs. These are real people's lives being affected. And I look at this, and I go, you know, what is it that somebody says, well, hey, it's going to happen. It's just going to happen. Sorry, your kids are not going to get an education. Sorry, the next generation's screwed. Hey, but we're saving that taxpayer dollar.
Oh, I don't think it's going to go down terribly well. I mean, I just don't think it's going to go down terribly well. And you know you're in trouble when Christians get upset. And when you've got a group of a bipartisan group, this is a great story, which I'm having difficulty finding, but you've got a bipartisan group that includes the Sojourner, the Catholics and the evangelicals all coming together and warning
that the budget cuts are not going to be good for the poor.
Wow, you've really stepped in something when you've got those three together.
You've got those three together. They've written a joint letter, and they said there's a moral dimension. Uh-oh.
Yeah, you know, I've been saying for the longest time, you know, budgets are about morality. It's about priorities. Same thing with these kind of hostage situations.
Yeah, well, they've brought in the moral dimension now, and so that's made things even more awkward. So it's getting difficult. And then you have the head of the NIH today also warning that they're going to have to stop research into Alzheimer's, into influenza, and into cancer. Saying, you know, it's very unfortunate, you know, because we're on the verge of all kinds of things, but it's not furloughs. We're just going to have to lay people off, and we're just not. And also people who come for treatment to NIH because there's nowhere else left to go, so they come for treatment to NIH, we're not going to be able to take them in.
See, I look at that and you say Alzheimer cancers and influenza research, and you go, well, those are all profit generators. You know, when you get cancer, that's like $250,000 in revenue. That's good for business. Alzheimer's, we're going to need places for people to go. It's good for business. All that stuff's good for business. Let it happen. We don't need research. Come on. We need to react to things and spend a whole bunch of money doing it.
Oh, they're not
going
to be able to do the research.
Yeah, well, again, the research doesn't help because they don't believe anyway. And it just blows my mind because here we are. I mean, again, down to the – do you really think it's going to happen? Do you think this is going to go into – do you think, you know, the middle of next month when they start – you know, some of the bad things start to happen, that it's going to continue?
Because
I think the deadline's already passed. I don't think they're going to get passed. They're going to get anything.
Deadline's passed. That's done deal. Well, I think it's going to start to bite the middle of next month, probably early April, really. Well, you see, we've got a deadline before then. We've got March the 27th, which is when the funding for running the government runs out. And they may start to try and fix things before then. So I think there's a possibility that a lot of people won't really feel the bite of these cuts.
Because I've got this theory that, you know, this just plays right into the anti-government wing of the Republican Party. Well, pretty much the entire Republican Party. It used to be a wing, and, you know, like Eisenhower said, anybody back in 1952 when he wrote his brother, he said anybody who would come out against labor unions, unemployment, Social Security, Farm Bill, you know, any of that stuff, their numbers were negligible and they were stupid. The sad reality is stupid is now running that party. And for all of the talk of business needs certainty, all of these hostage situations, all of these self-created crises is not good for business.
No, it's not good for business, and business doesn't like it.
Then why
business
don't they,
doesn't like this at all.
Then why don't they pull back the money and put these people in line? Because we know it's the money that keeps everybody. It's like herding cats. There's only one way you herd cats, and that's with cat food. There's only one way you herd politicians, and that's with money.
It is the only way you herd cats. Cats have no conscience, and so you can't herd them with punishment. You can only herd them with reward. It's the same with politicians.
And the exact same thing.
Yes.
And with voting them out of office, which I'm hoping we see a lot of that next time around. And I'm hoping this jumps up and bites them in the behind, which is what it should happen. Today, I guess the BP trial started today?
Yeah, the BP trial started today in New Orleans. Wow, it's taken a while. You've got the Department of Justice. You've actually got 11 sets of lawyers. You've got hundreds and hundreds of hours of minutes of opening statements. And you've got the Department of Justice's lawyer, Michael Underhill, opening, saying that the man in charge of BP's Deepwater Horizon rig warned his boss just days before the blowout that killed 11 men that staff were operating in chaos, paranoia, and insanity.
Wow.
So that's a good start.
That's a good start.
He says the company was guilty of willful misconduct and that it had calculated it needed $7 billion to pay shareholders their dividend. So it put a whole bunch of pressure on staff to save money and drill faster in order to reach the target.
Yeah.
A safety corner cut each day saved was $1 million.
Didn't we already know that?
Yeah, but he's got to make the case to the judge.
Oh, okay. And the thing that would have probably, what I understand is the thing that would have stopped it from kind of blowing up, wouldn't have cost, but I guess what, about $500,000?
Well, he said BP knew it was in difficulties, and the tragedy could have been averted with as little as a 10-second phone call or a 30-second walk down to the tool pusher.
Wow.
There's some pretty outrageous stuff, and there's more to come. Of course, we'll hear from BP, but there's more to come.
And they're on the hook for potentially what, 20?
Many billions. The deal that they're trying to work out is for $16 billion.
And of course, a whole bunch of we didn't do anything wrong, gag order stuff, everything in secret with no admission of guilt, right?
Well, I don't know whether it'll be no admission of guilt. I think they're going to have to admit something in this deal, because they're having to admit that they spilled things and that they did various things. No, they're going to have to admit that they did some things wrong in this deal.
Yeah, and that, beyond hiring the wrong subcontractors and the wrong outside agencies.
Yeah, but nobody's going to jail.
Okay. Well, I still think people should be going to jail.
I think a lot of people think people should be going to jail, but nobody is.
I think people should be going to jail from Wall Street, but nobody is. So
nobody is.
When you get to that level, the wheels of justice grind slowly, Victoria.
Very slowly, very slowly.
And the families of those 11 people who were killed on the job, very, very slowly. Because about 2 years, it was April 2 years ago,
yeah.
That this happened.
Yeah.
Jail for them all. Speaking of jail, understand some weirdness with the Pope in the UK.
Well, I mean, there's weirdness all over the place. I mean, there's weirdness with the Pope in the UK, with Britain's top Catholic, Cardinal O'Brien, resigning. The news coming out today, although he tells us he resigned some couple of months ago and told the Pope about it, but the announcement was made today, the day after the Observer Sunday newspaper broke the story of allegations by four priests, three current and one former, of inappropriate behavior dating back to the 1980s against Cardinal O'Brien. Very inappropriate behavior.
Yeah, the behavior just doesn't usually go away, does it?
No, it really doesn't. And O'Brien was going to go to the conclave to elect the new Pope, but he's not going now. And this is actually huge. I mean, this just doesn't happen, because any cardinal, even an excommunicated cardinal, can go to the conclave.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. And he gets a vote, obviously, right?
Yes, but he's not going.
Oh.
He's not going. This cardinal, he's decided not to go, which is really interesting.
That means the signal that sells me, and look, I'm not going to, I don't know all the facts, but the signal that sends me, he did something really, really pretty wrong.
It sends quite a signal. And this, of course, coming on top of the investigation by the 007 priests, which is a trio of cardinals appointed by the Pope to do an internal investigation after the scandal involving the Pope's butler, who was arrested and charged for stealing documents and then doing an expose of corruption and intrigue and all kinds of things going on inside the Vatican. And this trio of cardinals, known as the 007 priests, then came across a gay underground network of priests within the Vatican and blackmail and intrigue and corruption.
Wow, and that's not even a daytime drama.
No!
That's what you expect to see on soap operas during the daytime, in between Montel and whatever other garbage they've got on.
Yes!
Wow. And wow. All I can say is, wow, but, you know, here's the thing. That's not much different than when I grew up, you know, going to Catholic school. I mean, we were the swinging door parish. We were the poorest parish in the diocese, which is where all the trouble came. Before they washed them to somewhere else, all of the troubled priests would come through our area, which is why we had anywhere from 5 to 10 at any given time, and they weren't there very long. They moved on to cause trouble somewhere else. Not surprising to me. And I actually had two nuns who went off to print Bibles at Christmas. Which, you know, if anyone who's Catholic knows that's pregnant nun.
Oh, is that what that means?
Yeah. Sister,
I didn't know that.
Send her to the work camp to work off a little bit of the extra weight that she's been putting on the last couple of months. Oh boy, I can't wait. I also understand the Pope was gonna expected to issue new law that would change the rules on how electing his replacement.
And he did.
And he did.
He did. He did that today, and he speeded it up.
All right.
So he changed the law on how quickly the conclave could meet.
So maybe there'll be a replacement before he decides he's going to leave?
No, I mean, no, he's out of there on Thursday. But basically they can start meeting earlier than they previously could.
Yeah, see, that's how I thought. As soon as he announced, they should have been meeting because we want seamless transition so we don't go popeless.
Popeless, yes, that would be a terrible thing.
Yeah, we just cannot possibly go popeless.
No.
The Hegel thing, and what's going on with Hegel right now?
The Hegel vote is scheduled for tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Now, at the moment, as long as everybody holds their breath and nobody parts their hair on the wrong side or does anything like that, the vote will go through.
All right. That's interesting. And how about Brennan?
That is not at the moment going to go through. That's not even scheduled right now. Lou is going through for Treasury tomorrow.
Yeah, no surprise there.
Right. That's going to go through. But Brennan is being held up by any number of things. It's being held up by Benghazi. It's being held up by torture. And it's being held up by Rand Paul, who doesn't want people sitting at a cafe in Boston to be rained down by hellfire missiles.
I'm with him on that one. That's something I agree with Rand Paul on.
Yep, that's what he says. He doesn't want hellfire missiles raining down on you on a cafe in Boston.
Because, you know, the truth of the matter is the guy that you were probably targeting, I'd probably be sitting next to him.
Well, the way you've described your luck.
It is. I mean, there's no question about it. I would be the guy. I'd be the guy who got hit saving him, and I would go down in history as the guy who saved that guy. That's my luck. And finally, there's a bill to legalize pot.
There is a bill to legalize medical marijuana.
Yay.
That was introduced today. Yes, indeed.
I've actually never done it.
Well, then if you, God forbid, you got sick, you could. Oregon Democrat Earl Blumenauer today put forward this bill. He's got 13 co-sponsors, including Republican Representative Dana Rohrabacher of California. And the idea is that it would allow states to legalize medical pot in an effort to end the confusion around federal pot policy. And it would so it would create like a framework for the FDA to eventually legalize medicinal marijuana. And it would also stop the feds from interfering in any of the 19 states where medical marijuana is legal.
There you go. And that's what I've been wondering, what was going to happen, what the Justice Department would do with places that have already legalized it on the state level. So this is just saying it's federal on the federal level. It's okay to have medical marijuana. And I got to be honest with you. I don't even care if people smoke pot. It should be legal. It should be taxed. If we've got cigarettes and we've got booze, you know, I know people who've smoked for years. They're decent, upstanding people who go to work and they stay to themselves. They do their family thing. And that, I know a lot of people who drink alcohol who aren't as responsible. So if one's legal, so should be the other.
I must say I know the same people.
But as one who has never done it, and not for the uptight reason, but because I would have been the best at it, I chose not to.
Oh, as one who does not do it, you're well out of it.
Yeah. Again, I would have been the best. And then I would have moved on to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing, and I would have been the best at that. I'd have been the guy in the corner with the cup. But that's just my thoughts. Victoria, it's always great talking with you.
Good to talk to you. I'll talk to you later in the week.
All righty. Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Earth, sky.
Monday, February 25th. Today's full moon is the third full moon after the December 21st solstice.
In North America, we call it the Sap Moon, Lenten Moon, Crow Moon, or Worm Moon. There are many more names for full moons. Come to earthsky.org and search for full moon names to learn some of them.
Every full moon stands opposite, or nearly opposite, the sun and Earth's sky. It presents its fully lighted hemisphere, its entire day side, in our direction. That's why the moon looks full. So watch for tonight's moon to rise in the east around the time of sunset, climb highest up for the night around midnight, and set in the west Tuesday morning around sunrise.
Tonight's moon shines close to Regulus, the brightest star in the constellation Leo the Lion. 6 months from now, in late August, the sun will be in Leo. Here's something else you might not realize about the full moon. The full moon approximates the sun's position in front of the backdrop of stars 6 months from now.
Speaking of the sun's position in front of the stars, the sun today is shining in front of the constellation Aquarius. This constellation lies opposite, or 180 degrees, from Leo. So watch for tonight's full moon and contemplate the cycles of the heavens. Then go outside and watch as the Earth spins beneath the starry sky tonight. If you do this, you can see the full moon chase the star Regulus across the sky from dusk Monday evening until dawn on Tuesday. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org. Earth Sky.
Monday, February 25th. Today.
The Rick Smith Show. Changing America for the better.
Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can always email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. This weekend, again, Keystone Progress having the Pennsylvania Progressive Summit starting on March 1st. I'm working its way into the Saturday the 2nd. On Friday, begins at 4 p.m., followed by a reception by State Senator Dalen Leach at the Firehouse here in Harrisburg. The summit's going to be at the Harrisburg Hilton. Work your way down for the cocktail party reception down at the Firehouse restaurant. Also Saturday night, the big sing-along, a protest music sing-along by the 100,000 Poets and Musicians for Change group. Saturday night, 7:30 to 10 p.m., the Cornerstone Coffee House, 2133 Market Street in Camp Hill. For more information, let me know. Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. I will be there, and should be an interesting weekend of you know, a great opportunity to get out, meet people, fellow progressives, fellow like-minded folks, or you know, even if you disagree, show up and we can argue. That'll be interesting. Turns out, how many people remember Robert Mitchum, the actor from the 1940s, 50s, and into the you know, 70s, 80s as well, but he probably best known for Cape Fear and Night of the Hunter. Evidently, on this day back in 1949, Robert Mitchum was arrested by the LA County Police. With the LA Police, he was evidently smoking pot in a Laurel Canyon house there in the Los Angeles area when detectives burst in and arrested him. He's probably best known for saying, "Well, you know, well, this is the bitter end of everything." Turns out it wasn't though, because after he did his time, a couple of months in the county lockup, 2 months actually, he went on to star in Rachel and the Stranger, which was a huge box office hit. Now some say that he was kind of set up. His arrest, it was less than fair, and designed to bring publicity to the LA Police Department, their anti-drug efforts. You know, hey, you know, get a big shot like that, throw him in jail. There you go. He died in 1997. From our Facebook page, a great status update. One of the best I've ever seen. And what we were talking about earlier, Brian says, damn near booked a gateway to D.C. to lobby the House and the Senate for our 19th anniversary gift. He says, we'll never listen to TheRickSmithShow.com while making life-changing romantic decisions again. Take care of what's at home first. Mama's not happy. Nobody's happy. You gotta learn 19 years. You should have known that by now. So don't put me in the middle of it. But here, I love the passion. I love the fact that we've got folks who are willing to put themselves out, even if it means unhappiness. I look at here. Yeah, here in our capital, Our governor has picked up the support of a big Democratic. The big story was big Democratic donor. Corbett gets a big boost because the guy who's the head of Comcast, their executive vice president, David L. Cohen, who evidently is a big Rendell guy and has been a big Rendell guy, evidently he's going to be giving money to Corbett. And I honestly don't see what the surprise is. Corbett has been very good to those at the very top. The well-to-do love him. I mean, there's no surprise there. He's giving, think about it this way, a massive redistribution of wealth. Our kids' future for short-term profit for now. The drillers are happy. The big loophole is happy. So, you know, these companies who incorporate in Delaware, they can scrub their profits before they pay their CEO. Plenty of opportunity. And, you know, some of the people that they interviewed for this article, oh, they're shocked, surprised. And what I find interesting is you're going to see over the next couple of months the big money coming out. They really don't want to lose Corbett. That you don't want, especially to someone like Rob McCord or someone like Allison Schwartz, they really don't want that. Someone who's going to undo all the damage that this guy got and may actually, care about education. And, you know, I got an email during the break, you know, someone, well, why is this important? Why is, you know, what's the difference between the public and the private? What's the big deal? It's education. And, you know, Rich had sent me a link to a story about John Stossel. Evidently, John Stossel does this thing called Stossel in the Classroom. And it's all a bunch of really rabid right-wing talking points. Do you know what the power of controlling the next generation is? Do you know what the power of educating a kindergartner that government is bad? That we the people, bad? Private, for-profit corporations, good? Do you know the power in that? That's what they're working for. That's what they're spending their money on the Corbetts of the world for, to have that access, that control, that power. What's that saying? He who controls the present, he who controls the past, and he who controls the past controls the future. It's where we are. They're rewriting history every day. And just like they've done with the history of the labor movement, they've basically written it completely out of the textbooks. The middle class just appeared. It's as it always was, Ben. Always was, Ben. Listen to me. As it always has been. Something seriously wrong. Anyway, this weekend, I'm hoping to see everyone at the Keystone Progress Pennsylvania Progressive Summit Friday, Saturday, Harrisburg Hilton. Also, the big sing-along at the Cornerstone House Coffee Shop. I'm looking forward to both. Again, if you missed any portion of the program, ricksmithshow.com. Podcast, Stitcher on your smartphone. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickssmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at therickssmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the sway. Imperial.